This is the Quality News Network. Kyle Sampson, the former chief of staff to Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, voluntarily appeared before the Senate Judiciary Committee today. He told the senators that the principals, referring to Gonzalez and Harriet Myers, the former White House counsel, had approved and signed off on the dismissals of eight U.S. prosecutors. Gonzalez had said earlier this month that he was not involved in what was going on. Sampson said that Gonzalez's statement was not accurate. After the morning session, Democratic Senator Charles Schumer said, quote, "The credibility of the Attorney General on this issue is more or less shattered." The Senate today, in a 51-47 vote, passed the $123 billion spending bill that funds the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. It also contains a non-binding goal of ending the combat missions in Iraq by the end of March 2008. President Bush continues to insist he will veto any legislation that contains language about a troop withdrawal timeline. British Prime Minister Tony Blair once again called for the unconditional return of the 15 British sailors and Marines who were seized by Iran 6 days ago. He said Britain would not negotiate for their release. Iran says the British personnel were in Iranian waters. Britain insists they were in Iraqi waters and has the global positioning coordinates that back up the claim. Britain is taking the case to the United Nations asking for a statement that would deplore Iran's actions in addition to demanding their immediate release. Iran has withdrawn its offer to release the only female member of the group of 15 captured. She has reportedly written a second letter which calls for the removal of British troops from Iraq. CNN is also reporting that U.S. forces in the Persian Gulf had tried to help the British crew before they were taken by Iranian guards, but was not able to find them or reestablish communications with them. In the northeastern part of Baghdad today, two suicide bombers detonated their explosives vests at a crowded market. At least 61 people were killed. North of Baghdad, in the Diyala province, at least 43 people were killed by three car bombs. The new U.S. ambassador to Iraq, Ryan Crocker, was sworn in today in Baghdad. He had previously been the U.S. ambassador to Pakistan. He replaces Zalmay Khalilzad, who has been named by President Bush, to be the new U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. You are listening to the Quality News Network.
Run for your lives. The lenders are coming. They're in the mailbox. They're overloading your email. They're on the phone. They won't be denied. The best rate, the biggest bargain, fewer points, too much information. Gold Coast Financial to the rescue. They can offload the overload and handcraft a loan that suits your needs. Are you on lender overload? Relief is just minutes away. Call Gold Coast Financial, 831-649-8757. 831-649-8757. Gold Coast Financial.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to a million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
In Mexico City, lawmakers are considering a proposal that would legalize most abortions in the capital city of 8 million people. The legislation is strongly opposed by Roman Catholic groups. An early spring storm hit the Plain States today, killing at least 4 people in 3 states. The line of storms was felt in a wide area from Texas to South Dakota. In its quarterly survey of consumer loans, the American Bankers Association reports that late payments on some auto and home equity loans have increased. According to a survey by Manpower, Inc., an employment staffing company, the top 3 jobs that employers are looking to find workers for are sales representatives, teachers, and mechanics. It turns out that customer information from nearly 46 million credit and debit cards was stolen from the discount retailer TJX, which owns TJ Maxx, Marshalls, and other stores. That is much higher than the retailer had revealed 2 months ago. The government's largest telecommunications contract was awarded to AT&T, Quest, and Verizon today. The 10-year deal is worth up to $48 billion. Light sweet crude is trading at $66.03 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was up 48 points, the NASDAQ was up 1 point, and the S&P 500 up 5. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Me and the dog, we're afraid of thunderstorms, you see. And so last night, as massive thunderstorms rolled through here in the remote undisclosed location that is the Head On Radio Network studios, the big old dog and I, we huddled in abject terror under the table until the storms were passed, and the microphone won't reach that far, so we couldn't do a show. No. Now, the thunderstorms were really bad last night, and they wiped out our phone systems. And I'll be honest with you, I can do it, but a three-hour filibobster is not my idea of a good time. This is literally conversation radio, and without you, there's not much to it. Right, Agnes?
You have no idea.
Yeah, our phones were whacked last night. I couldn't talk to you. You couldn't talk to me. And it was of a level sufficient that we wouldn't have gotten much talking done at all, even absent the telephones, because the thunder was rattling the windows for what would have been the first 2 hours of the show. I like thunder too. I love thunderstorms. I'll sit out and watch them blow through, and Agnes will come out on the porch and, "You darn fool, get inside! You're setting a bad example for the children." Sitting there watching the thunderstorm roll through. Honey, it's a thunderstorm. Get inside. I'm not asking. I'm telling. Anyway, that's where we were yesterday evening. Listen, I want to start out the evening with a little faux levity. I don't know if you're going to find this funny or not. It's just, as far as I'm concerned, it's just weird and unsettling. You know, the Radio and Television Correspondents' Dinner was last night in D.C. And Dear Leader was there, and Karl Rove was there. And Colin Mochrie and whoever the other guy is that does Whose Line Is It Anyway were the safe, tame comedians hired to host the event. And so they brought Karl Rove up on stage and did this very dry, boring little bit of shtick. And I'll admit, this is this is audio from video, so it's a little bit about like dancing about architecture. But still, you'll get the idea. Fun times at the Radio and Television Correspondents' Dinner last night with none other than Karl Rove. Hit it, Agnes.
Kick it. Yeah! Now listen up, suckers, don't get the jitters. But MC Rose says heads off of critters. That's true, it's cruel to see, but he's gonna be about animal cruelty. He's a man, he's a treasure trove. But tell me, what is your name?
I'm MC Rose.
That's right, he can't be beat because he's so white from his head to his feet. But he will rap it when you give him a chance. Look at him move, doing a rapping dance. That's true, he's a dancing resident. He is the sidekick to the president. He's going way above. Tell me, what is your name?
MC Rose.
That's true, he crossing his arms. He's rapping and a-chilling and a-showing his charms. He will do it, or without fail. Get out his gun, cause he's shooting quail. This man will never stop. Look at him jumping up and down and ready to hop. He's got so much to prove, man. Tell me you never saw this man move. Doing the dance, the Karl Rove dance. doing the dance, the car roll dance, dancing and talking and dancing and talking and dancing and talking and dancing and talking. Now it's time for a little shock with the Colin over there doing the old beatbox. Treasure trove, tell me what is your name?
MC Rose.
And see him later hanging in the cove, but tell me what is your name?
MC Rose.
Doing it right, and he really strove. One more time, what's your name?
MC Rose.
Give it up for MC Rose in the house.
All right, you sick yet? I'm sick. Hey, I had to watch it earlier today. It's only fair to you. Only got the audio. If you want to see the whole thing, it's over at crooksandliars.com. And you know, how many different levels is this disturbing on? Ooh, tortured grammar. Poor little proposition out there flapping in the breeze at the end of the sentence. On how many levels is this disturbing? My suggestion. This would have worked, it would have been perfect if they'd done it in blackface. Because this was, of course, it's a bunch of Republicans up on a stage. What else are they going to do? They're going to mock black people. Did you hear the sound effects? I didn't realize that Colin Mockery was such a bigot. That's just revolting. And, you missed the part of it that was video. You're lucky if you did. If you've got a taste for self-torture and self-torment, go watch it at Crooks and Liars. This was an abject... And, you know, trust me, this was not an homage of what is now referred to by trade papers like Radio and Records as urban music. This was a straight-up poke in the eye at hip-hop, rap, whatever you care to call it. And, you know, the fact that I don't know the fine distinctions between rap and hip-hop, I betray my cultural ignorance. But at least I'll acknowledge it. Is this the best they could come up with? These people are highly paid comedians, and the best they can come up with is MC Rove? The thing was scripted from the beginning with him standing up there answering questions. Well, you know, Mr. Rove, what do you like to do when you get home? When I get home, I like to have a drink, non-alcoholic, of course, because I don't drink. And then he blew the line. And then I ripped the tops off of little animals. Really? Topless animals? Well, I ripped their heads off. But last night, and we'll have a little audio for you from Dear Leader as well. Last night we had a sort of deflection by self-admission, deflection by confession approach to the so-called humor of the Radio and Television Correspondents' Dinner. Don't get me wrong. I love a laugh. I love a great joke. I love a pratfall. But not this. Not this. I mean, this was the worst kind of blackface. You remember the hell that Ted Danson got for showing up at some dinner somewhere in blackface? Well, this was that without the makeup. And it seems abundantly clear to me that the Republican Party at this point in time, and I've got further evidence, has really pulled the rubber mask off. And they are in full-bore race-hate mode. Disgusting. Go and have a look if you want to. 15 minutes after the hour, we'll take our first break. A reminder, or I'll let you know. It's not a reminder. I would have had to have told you beforehand. We will have on the show here in about 15 minutes or so a very good friend of the program and a dandy fine good author, Jeff Biggers, author of The United States of Appalachia. Stick around. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Listen up, suckers, don't get the jitters. But MC Rose has a heads off of critters. That's true, it's cruel to see, but he's gonna be about animal cruelty. He's a man, he's a treasure trove. But tell me, what is your name?
I'm MC Rose.
That's right, he can't be beat because he's so white from his head to his feet. But he will rap.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Hey, have you got a minute?
Huh?
I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The Man Ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Oh,
20 past the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is your liberal voice. This is the horn. And, the racism of the right wing. And by racism, I mean racism in its true definition, a determination on the part of a group of people that they are morally, physically, intellectually, and spiritually superior to another group of people based upon the color of their skin. That kind of racism. Now, Dateline Chicago, this from a right-wing news site who will remain nameless. No, they're not going to remain nameless. Bunch of racist bastards, Newsmax. If anyone else running for president locked his granny away and refused to allow her to be seen, would the media complain? You betcha. But America's media have supinely, he uses words like supinely, have supinely allowed Barry Obama, that's Barry Obama, you got that? Barry Obama to pretend he has no, where's the reverb? No white relatives. He has paraded his step-grandmother in Kenya, who never saw him until the 1980s, as his granny, and locked the grandmother who actually raised him away in a closet. I didn't write that. I didn't make that up. That's coming straight out of the out of one of the little megaphones of the right wing. Now, the Chicago Tribune reports, quote, the Obama campaign declined to make his white grandmother available. Is she sick? Not apparently. Bedridden? Hospitalized? Not apparently. She is the, again with the quotes, prisoner of Obama. And of Obama's racist myth that he is black and not black and white. The Republican Party is hollering about racism? This is the one where you use the old metaphor, or perhaps the simile. Yeah, I think it's more of a simile. About the pot and the kettle. Only in the case of the Republican Party, it's the, I don't know, the snowball calling the baseball white. This is Strom Thurmond's party, for God's sakes, where that dashing young cracker Strom Thurmond ran upstairs and did the upstairs maid and raped her and impregnated her and it was South Carolina, it wasn't rape. Free Granny Madeline Dunham Obama. This crap rolls into my email box, and I feel compelled to share it with you because I want you to see what is in the pipeline and heading for the mainstream media near you. This column, is it a column? Is it a screed? Is it a little mini Mein Kampf? I'm not sure which. Is by some goon named Andy Martin. You know, I guess they'll let anybody dip a dead bird's claw in a little pile of caca and scratch it on a piece of tree bark and call it journalism over at Newsmax. Barack Obama is one of the most racist politicians in America today, and we let him get away with it. We are afraid to confront Obama's reality, so we pretend that reality is not there, even though it is staring us in the face. Anyone remember Miss Lillian or Barbara Bush or Bill Clinton's mom drinking this? Oh, wait. This is the best part, okay? Anyone remember Miss Lillian or Barbara Bush or Bill Clinton's mom drinking, gambling, card-playing gal that she was? Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8... Yeah, 8 paragraphs. It took this semi-literate twit, Andy Martin, 8 paragraphs to get in a dig at Bill Clinton's dead mother. And so he seems to think that mothers and grandmothers are the same people, this Andy Martin. Maybe that's the core of the antipathy between grandson and grandmother. Maybe that's why Obama's white grandmother is locked in Perda.
Huh?
Archie Bunker moment.
What? Edith?
She is offended that Obambi... what? Shamelessly highlights his black relatives in Kenya and equally shamelessly pretends his white relatives in Hawaii who actually raised him do not exist. It would hurt me, says Andy Martin. No one could get away with pretending his white grandmother didn't exist except a media witch... witch doctor! Except a media witch doctor such as Obama. What in God's name is going on here? Well, you know. It's just Republicans being what Republicans are, and that is a bunch of racist, sleazebag, bigoted, prejudiced, 12th century freaks. He just called, this guy in print called Barack Obama a witch doctor. I don't know. I'm looking a few paragraphs down to see if he gets around a spear chucker. I have been attacking Obama for months because of his racist exclusion of his white relatives from the campaign trail. Put this over. I mean, this is even beneath Newsmax. And they're pretty low. I mean, this belongs over on Panzerfaust or something. Obama putting down the white race. Oh, my God. We finally smoked out a picture of Obama's sister in the Chicago Tribune. She had said she was his advisor but refused to be photographed. Did she plan to enter the White House with a paper sack over her head? But the segregation of Madeline Dunham, Obama's white grandmother and only real grandmother, has to be one of the cruelest and most mendacious political kidnappings this nation has ever seen. Witch doctor, kidnapper, hiding the white women... Oh, where's that soundbite when I need it most? Where is Cleavon Little? Where are the white women at? From Blazing Saddles. Hey, look, that's what Andy Martin's asking. What has Barack Obama done with the white women? So is it any... I mean, this is the base, okay? This is the base. This is the hardcore folks that the Republicans know that rain or shine, hell or damnation, they can always get out to the polls. And they're playing to it, and they're playing hard. Is it any surprise, then, that we had the little blackface minstrelsy act of Colin Mockery with Karl Rove last night at the radio and TV correspondents' dinner? Hopping up and down, making a mockery of another ethnic group's art form? Leaping and screeching and howling? Is it any wonder? To me, it's not. I submit that to the most of you who listen to this program, it's not either. Because making fun of cultural and stereotyping cultural institutions is one of those ways where, you know, and it's just like Rush Limbaugh when he tells the caller, call me back when you get the bone out of your nose. Well, my friends, that's just entertainment. We're just having good fun. What happened to America's sense of humor? It ain't funny. It ain't funny. All right, coming up, I'm hoping, our interview with our good friend Jeff Biggers, author of The United States of Appalachia. In the meantime, after that, the phone lines will be open, and Lord, this isn't even the end of the Obama story. And there's more beyond that. There always is. You're listening to the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice, your voice. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Do you believe the environment is issue number one? Does the idea of genetically modified food cause you to lose your appetite? Do you prefer green over greed? Do rising sea levels and vanishing polar ice cause you concern about our planet and what we are doing to it? Would you like news with attitude on the environment, organics, renewable sources of energy? Well, then join me, John Fox, for Foxed Up. Weekdays, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. in the UK, and 9 a.m. here in Sydney, where conversation radio becomes conservation radio, and we turn it straight up to 11. Right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Herbst. I play Elizabeth Weber on General Hospital. I want you to know about a wonderful nonprofit foundation called the Jessie Cause, saving the babies from Group B strep, also known as beta strep. It's named after little Jesse, who needed three brain surgeries, all because his mom was never given a simple test. Group beta strep is the leading infectious killer of newborns in the United States, yet most people have never even heard of it. Amazingly, one-third of all pregnant women have beta strep, and it's almost 90% preventable with common antibiotics. Tell your friends about beta strep, and if you're pregnant, ask your doctor to test you. Together, we can save the babies and put an end to this devastating yet preventable bacteria. For more information, call toll-free at 877-HALT-GBS. That's 877-HALT-GBS. Or log on to groupbstrep.com. That's groupbstrep.com. Jesse and I, thank you.
Almost 25 minutes before the hour. Mrs. Dunham, Andy Martin writes, if you can call it writing, you know, God, it reminds me of that catty old comment from Truman Capote about Jack Kerouac. My God, that's not writing, that's typing. Andy Martin attempts to write, Mrs. Dunham lives alone in the same apartment where she has lived for many years. Thus, it is reasonable to assume she is not incapacitated or an invalid. Granny Dunham told the New York Times she was not well enough to speak, but in reality, the Obama campaign maintains Stalinist control over potential interviewees. Obama's minions tried to control access to Obama's friend who was recently released from prison. Since he became a candidate for U.S. Senator, Obama has locked his white relative away in his racist closet. My God, this is Alexander Dumas. This is the granny in the Iron Mask. Oh, where's D'Artagnan when you need him? All because, Madeline Dunham. I'm sorry, Agnes has perpetual coffee coming out of her nose right now. The Granny and the Iron Mask, it was that good, Agnes?
Thumbs up.
Madeline Dunham raised Barry Obama. Why is it when every time he writes Barry Obama, I see a middle picture of Greg Brady? Madeline Dunham raised Barry Obama. It was probably her money that got him admitted to the prestigious Punahou School in Hawaii and paid his fees. Oh my God, do you remember the Brady Bunch the episode where they went to Hawaii and Greg had the surfing accident because the evil tiki idol that Bobby had stolen from the cave and Vincent Price was trying to kill him? Oh, sorry, I'm getting confused. Her efforts were formative, perhaps even more so than those of Obama's mother Anne, Madeline's daughter, and yet Madeline is being hidden away, way, 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 way. All because she's white. Oh. And Barry Obama is a black, quotes around black, candidate for president. What a lie. What hypocrisy, what cowardice, and this man wants to sit in the Oval Office? I guess nobody ever called Andy Martin over and said, Andy, buddy, your hero, George Bush. When people the same skin color as Barack Obama were getting their little brains blown out in Vietnam, your hero, non-coward, mission accomplished buddy Georgie was so up to his freaking nose in cocaine and Bolivian marching powder that he couldn't be bothered to show up on the deal that he'd signed up for to guard Montgomery, Alabama against the VC. What cowardice. But blacks are a lot smarter than whites when it comes to slights. Man, he's working the Jesse Jackson circuit here. Because they have experienced racial slights all their lives. You mean like what you're writing here, Andy? Blacks know who Obama is. What is this generic... What is this generic... Is there a generic black guy that right-wingers go to? Tell me, do you know who Obama is? Blacks know who Obama is. Very good. Let me get that. But blacks know who... And they know how he is trying to pass and ignore his past. His white past. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. And Barry. During the decade when crack devastated the African-American community, it was the black grannies who were and are the backbone of the community. These grandmothers helped stabilize the disintegrating families ravaged by drugs. Black grannies will not like the fact that their white counterpart is being treated badly by Obama. Now, just, oh, golly damn! He starts out with an utterly unfounded assertion that Barack Obama is hiding his white grandmother in his racist closet, and proceeds in the penultimate paragraph to asserting that Madeleine Dunham, his grandmother, is being poorly treated by Barack Obama. Hey, Andy Martin, you freak, you racist, you Nazi, you sleazebag. Did it ever occur to you that maybe Madeleine Dunham doesn't want to put herself out in the public spotlight for people like you to rip the flesh off her bones, you buzzard, you? Did it ever occur? But no. No, because they know this. They know, yeah, of course it occurred to them. It didn't occur to them. They know it to be a fact. But you can't whip up the crackers. See, he's being a racist, too. You can't whip up that same weird little fringe percentage that put Bob Corker over the top in Tennessee by playing jungle drums every time the name of Harold Ford Jr. was mentioned. You can't whip them up by saying that Barack Obama's grandmother doesn't want to have a sit-down with Katie Couric. No. You've got to assert that he's a black man who's not black enough, who's done something to a white woman. And what's more, the white woman he's done something to, it's his own grandmother. And you wind up with a sentence like, black grannies will not like the fact that their white counterpart is being treated badly by Obama. Now, I've read virtually this entire article to you now. Where is there... I mean, there's a lot of weird sort of UFOs took me up in the spaceship and put something where it ought not be and never took it out and brought me back to Earth, and therefore I make up weird crap assertions in the article. But where is there a fact that anyone is abusing or mistreating or maltreating Madeleine Dunham? Nowhere. 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 Black and white grandmothers? My guess is they will stick together on this one. They will be offended by the way Obama is treating the woman who really raised him and was the stabilizing factor in his life. Madeleine Dunham. I repeat, free Granny Madeleine Dunham! White power! I mean, I'm having my fun. You can't read this and not... And not poke a little bit of fun at just what an abject, I mean, short bus riding, window licking, fake journalist Andy Martin is. But, you see, there's more to it than this. Because this is what goes out to the weirdo wingnuts who actually read Newsmax and go, I reckon they wouldn't printed it Newsmax, or it weren't it not true. Lord, Lord, Lord. But you see, what's going to happen is some of this will, because this is how the right-wing megaphone works. This is how it goes down. Because it starts out with something absolutely insane, utterly whacked, just nuts. I mean crazy. Just, you know, go get the nets, the hooks, and the white coats. Crazy. And then over at NBC, Tim Russert, who you know reads Newsmax. I mean, come on. Tim Russertleson. Our topic today on Meet the Press. Why is Barack Obama holding his white grandmother hostage? We'll be interviewing Tom DeLay today to find out.
Well, Tim, if you'll read my book, No Defeat, No Surrender, you'll find that it was this way for me when I was trying to get into the Vietnam War, and all the coloreds had the good spots in the draft, and I could not go. That's the way it is with these Democrat liberals, especially the dark ones. And he's not really that dark, so what does that say about him?
I mean, I'm being a little bit facetious, but yeah, it'll make its way into the corporate news cycle. Why can't we see Obama's white granny? And maybe it's because Obama's granny, white, black, green, pink, or polka-dotted, wants nothing to do with a dirtbag like Tim Russert. Maybe she has a little more self-respect than to portray, than to participate and be portrayed in the circus that is the American idolization of what used to at least try to be a respectable medium. Be it NBC, CBS, or ABC. But that's me. Let's take a break. Maybe the interview's not going to work out. Sort of had to reschedule it last night on the fly because of the phone system problems. So jump in. Fire up the phones. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. This is America's voice, your voice, the liberal voice. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
You can see that in Alberta, diversity is very strong. You see people from different places, from different backgrounds. And we all have learned to live together. That's why Alberta is a great place to live.
We come from different places, and we have to accept each other because our backgrounds are different, our cultures are different, and we have to understand other people.
I think that our community, being as open as it is, just gives people a chance to really enjoy interaction between different cultures and really get to know each other without making any judgments.
Trabajando juntos podemos lograr la gran diferencia en la comunidad. That it means by working together we can make a big difference in our community.
To find out how you can make a difference, visit helpmakeadifference.com. This message is brought to you by the Government of Alberta and Global Television.
Oh, we're really trying to poke the GOP with a sharp stick tonight, aren't we? Playing that music and some of that Jimi Hendrix feller.
And dancing, too.
And dancing. Dancing. There's dancing. That's D-A-I-N-T-Z-I-N. Dancing. A quick email from our pal Marty. The generic black GOP the right wing goes to, in order, J.C. Watts, Anderson Cooper, Ward Connerly, and then the big gun, Clarence Thomas. Big gun is in all caps, and we all know why. We watched the Anita Hill hearings, if we're of a certain age. A little less than 8 minutes before the hour, and we go to the phones. Our buddy Bob calling in from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
There?
There he is, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's good to hear you. It is good to have you on the air.
Well, you know, we're scared of thunder around here, Bob.
No, I know. It's strike, but hey, guess what? I like strikes. I like the strikes that the unions do down there. Our good buddy out there that works hard for them. Yeah, I love him desperately, like a brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he works not for himself. He's not selfish. He's not thinking of self. He's thinking of others. And, you know, you started off the show with something that scared me. And no, not really scared me, but it just made me sick. Sick to the depth, to the width, to the height that my soul can reach. That filth that the Pigletons have been putting on the air, they have put out there about Karl Rove being what, MC Rove?
Mm-hmm.
Come on, save me. Bob, throw me a rope. Give me something to climb out of this hell that they put us into. Please.
No, all they did was
so they denigrated every black man that,
yeah, they did,
side by side with in Vietnam. They denigrated them. They treated them like they were like some kind of
But don't act like that's anything new, Bob.
No, it's a fact. And hey, you and I have talked about pink people. You know, they ain't no white. They ain't a white.
I'm the pink. I'm a pink guy. Yeah.
Yeah, and so am I. No, my skin, if I look at it in the sunlight, it's pink. There's nothing white about me, and I'm a pink man. I'm not a white man. And you know, they pick on the pink ladies. The ladies that stand out there wearing pink, well, by God, they wear my color.
Yeah, code pink.
Yeah, code pink wears my color. I'm not a white man. I'm a pink man, and I love those ladies. They got more courage than any one of them white little pasty little things that are up there in the White House. Oh, of course, it's a White House, not a pink house. It should be painted pink.
Oh, God, that'd drive them crazy, wouldn't it?
No, it should be painted pink, really, because they're pink holes or pink, you know, because most of them up there are, you know, kind of that way.
Yeah, like a little bit authoritarian, a little bit Maoist, a little bit Stalinist, a little bit pink.
Hey, Bob, they're always trying to make you out to be less than you are. You know, Agnes, I love her. Like a daughter, I love her. Like I love you like a son. But guess what? These filthy, lying pigs that have drawn us into this filthy war in Iraq are the same BASTARDS, I didn't say the word, that drew us into Vietnam and killed 58,000 of my brothers, and most, if not all of them, were either pink or ebony. My favorite color is ebony, because there ain't a black man on this planet that either are ebony or dark ebony. There is no and ebony. I used to read that magazine, and I thought, yeah, okay, these are my people. Because I lived with them, Bob. I ate out of the same green tin can that they ate out of.
Sure.
And I loved them because they loved me as a brother, because we fought side by side. And we did not fight for a flag. We fought for each other to stay alive. And that's what's going on in our
Well, life. Maybe, you know what? You just hit on something, Bob. Maybe that is the difference. Maybe that is the real, honest-to-God, down-on-the-ground difference. Karl Rove can stand up there and mock an entire segment of the American population because he has never sweated, nor bled, nor laughed, nor cried with any of them. He's lived in a little pink world, in a little pink house, surrounded by little pink people, and when, you know, when his country needed him, Karl Rove was afraid to go. Just like George Bush was afraid to go. Just like Dick Cheney was afraid to go. Just like the chinless Ken Melman was afraid to go. Just like Rudy Giuliani was afraid to go. The list goes on and on and on.
And it is distinguished. Kind of like that thing.
But that's what makes them able to do this.
Yeah, well, the list is distinguished. Think about George Herbert Walker Bush, who dove out of his airplane and left his crew to die out of a perfectly sound airplane, because he did not want to complete the mission. He took the coward's way out and dove out of it and let the plane crash with his crew aboard, and no one can tell.
Well, you know, I mean, you do know that George H.W. Bush was incompetent. That's why they see he wasn't on in that particular aircraft over Chichijima. That was a photographing run, Bob. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, I'm aware of it, but he let.
Yeah, yeah. That's why they called him Bailout Bush.
Yeah.
But he was incompetent.
He was a coward, just like his son.
Yeah, he was incompetent to fly with any ordnance aboard his aircraft.
Yes, absolutely. He could not fight. He was not a fighter. He was a photographic maybe he was a pornographic hero, right? He was trying to take pictures, and then he couldn't even take pictures, so he let his He let the men that went into that situation with him die. He didn't even try to save them. He saved himself. And that's what George and, Karl
Rove.
Karl Rove, you know, with his MC Rove thing, he's trying to drag in what? He's driving down the courage of any man that has ever stood. And, you know,
yeah, he is. Bob, we've got to roll, though. We're at the top of the hour.
I'm going to say something.
Okay.
Just one more moment.
Okay, go.
I miss Andrew from New York.
He's out there.
Well, I miss him because I haven't heard him lately, and I miss him because he's a brother. He is my brother. I miss him. And Andy from the UK, I miss him, too. I would just love to hear your voice.
All right, good deal. Thanks, Bob. We've got to get out of here.
Good. Bye-bye.
Bye now. We'll be back. This is The Horn.
Now, ain't kind of funny what the children say, Skipper O. Daddy hates mama, mama hates dad.
Last night you should have heard the fight they had. Gave little sister another bad dream. She woke us all up with a terrible scream. Skipper O.
Skipper O. This is the Quality News Network. Britain has asked the UN Security Council to support a statement calling for the immediate release of 15 British naval personnel in Iranian custody. The six-day-old situation escalated further today when Tehran retracted its offer to release the only woman detainee. Iran is demanding an apology because it says the crew was in Iranian waters. The British insist they have proof they were in Iraqi waters. The Senate today expressed its opposition to the continuing war in Iraq by passing a spending bill with a pullout date for U.S. troops. The $120 billion spending bill to fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan sets a non-binding goal of ending the combat missions in Iraq in March of next year. President Bush continues to insist he will veto any legislation that contains language about a troop withdrawal. The Iraq war has now entered its fifth year. The cost so far in lives, more than 3,200 U.S. troops. The U.S. has spent more than $350 billion on the conflict. Also on Capitol Hill today, Kyle Sampson, the former chief of staff to Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, voluntarily appeared before the Senate Judiciary Committee. He told the senators that the principals, referring to Gonzalez and Harriet Myers, the former White House counsel, had approved and signed off on the dismissals of eight U.S. prosecutors. His testimony contradicts Gonzalez's early statements that he was not involved in what was going on. In Mexico City, lawmakers are considering a proposal that would legalize most abortions in the capital city of 8 million people. Most abortions in the Roman Catholic groups, strongly oppose the legislation. Feminists say if it passes, it would be a major step forward for women in Latin America. And a tornado as wide as two football fields cut through a small Colorado town this morning, destroying it. The storm stretched from South Dakota to Texas. Three deaths have been reported so far. And Congress honored the legendary Tuskegee Airmen today with a Congressional Gold Medal. The fighter pilots who made up America's first black air squadron distinguished themselves in World War II, even as they were discriminated against in the military and on the home front. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We have science and business news coming up next. Now, this.
Attention business owners. Getting new customers is now just one click away. Sounds too good to be true, right? Well, you got us. It's actually two clicks away with the new MyLocalYP.com. MyLocalYP.com is more than an online yellow pages. It's an interactive gateway that connects customers with your business, all in just two clicks. Why continue to pay thousands of dollars on an antique advertising medium, especially one that ends up going into the recycling bin? Make the smart upgrade at only a fraction of the cost. Try for yourself. MyLocalYP.com. MyLocalYP.com will put your business in the radar of thousands of potential customers. They'll be able to make reservations online, even print out the map with directions, all in just two clicks. Call 1-800-505-1883 today to find out more about this great new service. The sooner you do, the faster your cash register will start to ring. The number again is 1-800-505-1883. MyLocalYP.com.
Researchers in Japan say they've developed an oral vaccine for Alzheimer's disease that may be ready for human clinical trials later this year. The vaccine proved effective in mice in the early stages of the disease. It returned their mental function to near normal levels in just 3 months' time with no side effects. The UN health organizations are recommending that heterosexual men become circumcised. That's based on evidence that doing so reduces the risk of HIV by as much as 60%. And it turns out that customer information from nearly 46 million credit and debit cards was stolen from the discount retailer TJX. That is much higher than the retailer had revealed 2 months ago. The government's largest telecommunications contract was awarded to AT&T, Quest, and Verizon today. The 10-year deal for voice, video, and data services is worth up to $48 billion. Sprint was the loser in the contract bid. Light sweet crude is trading at $66.03 a barrel. In its quarterly survey of customer loans, the American Bankers Association reports that late payments on some auto and home equity loans have increased. The survey finds that credit card delinquencies have held pretty much steady. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 48, the NASDAQ up 1, and the S&P up 5. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Almost 6 minutes after the hour, as we cruise into the follow-up to last night's abortive, he said abortive, prayer meeting edition. I'm Bob Kincaid, and we go straight to the phones. Our good friend Georgia calling in from California. Hey, Georgia, welcome to the program. Thanks for taking time to call.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Hi. I'm fine. How are you guys getting along?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Good. I'm glad you're back. I missed you.
It is good to be back.
Listen, you know, I was listening, and I didn't bother watching the dinner, you know, because I just have a low threshold for nausea.
Right.
So I didn't bother, but I did go check out Crooks and Liars and did see the clip. And I can't tell you how disgusted I was. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was a clown show, you know, and to see that David Gregory participated in it, I don't know who the black gentleman was up there, to be perfectly honest, but to see that someone of color would be up there condoning it, if you will. You know, it's a big joke, you know.
Your silence constitutes your acceptance, as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly. It was a disgusting display. I post on the AOL message boards quite often, and there are often messages about, well, why don't the blacks in this country just move on? Move on. Slavery and blah, blah, blah.
To where?
You know... Well, when I see displays, as I saw in that film clip, what do you mean move on with what? Move on with what? They've set civil rights back 100 years with this stuff, and they keep throwing it in their faces. And where do they want them to move on with it? You know, it's not dead. Prejudice is not dead, you know?
Yeah.
It's there. And every time, I heard on the little news blurb on your break that the Tuskegee Airmen were finally recognized. Well, and how many years later? How many decades later? You know? And what they wind up doing, the poor people in this country can't move on because it's thrown in their faces every time they turn around.
Sure.
They keep the Confederate flag flying high and strong. We're all supposed to do what with it? Respect it?
It was a day after we had buried my dad, Georgia, down in Alabama, that I went back to take care of some last details, and I turned around, and I looked through a grove of pine trees. There is a segment of that cemetery that's only been there since the 1950s, so it's not like anybody from Shiloh's buried there. There's a daggum Confederate battle flag flying over it.
Oh.
And it really makes the bile rise in your gorge. You know, and no, there's no moving on. There's no getting over it. There's no getting past it. There's no getting by it as long as we insist on hanging on to this kind of hate.
That's right. That's right. And to think that a lot of that, and hello, Agent Fred, wherever you are, is coming from the White House. They're keeping this prejudice alive.
Yes, they are. And for as long as there are skits like what went on last night at the TV and radio correspondents' dinner, it doesn't matter how many times they honor the Tuskegee Airmen, because we know that their fingers are crossed behind their back when they do it.
That's right. And it's all just another PR thing with a photo op involved. as usual.
Yeah.
It's all lip service.
It's all shtick.
Yes. This is a, I can't believe how low people can sink. You know, I am just amazed by it. I mean, I've certainly lived no Pollyanna life, you know. I've seen plenty of prejudice in my life. I've seen many things in my life. But to think that it comes from the highest place in the land, the highest office in the land, you know, do something. You know, at least try to be oblique, something. You know, try to mask it, try to hide it, try to...
Well, see, and see, that's the thing. That's the thing that rides behind all this. I mean, I'm sure that out there, there's some little winger listening to the program, because I know that they listen because they call and verbally abuse Agnes from time to time on the telephone. But they're saying, you know, well, it was just a harmless little skit. You know, who knew? You know, the fact of the matter is, Georgia, not a word was uttered at that dinner last night that was not pre-approved, pre-scripted, pre-everything by the White House.
Absolutely.
Everything passed.
Not now, especially not after Colbert. Yeah, I'm sure that.
Yeah, that's not going to happen again.
Mm-mm, never.
So, as a consequence, what you have is the tacit approval of the White House of that little bit of bigoted garbage.
Absolutely. Absolutely correct.
Georgia, we don't hear from you very often, but I tell you what, I love it when I do.
Oh, well, thank you. I will take that as a compliment.
And, yeah, don't lose the phone number.
Oh, I won't. Let me move on now, but let me put in a plug for Ben Burge.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes.
He needs the money. I'm watching his little thermometer, right, every time I go to White Rose. He needs the money, folks. Send it in. A nickel, a dime, a dollar, whatever you can spare.
Right. Make the thermometer rise.
Thank you. Yeah, I'd love to see that. Listen, you have a wonderful day.
Glad you
to
too.
Have you back. Love to Agnes and the kids. And I won't lose the number. You really got me with this one. You know, generally I'll just write a little something, and I just listen a lot, and I love everybody on it. Oh, just Peter. Is it Peter from Florida?
Yes.
Oh, I just love that man.
Everybody does. He's got a fan club.
He is just a bright spot of my day sometimes.
Well, thanks so much, Georgia. You have a wonderful afternoon.
Thank you. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
I love you all. Bye-bye.
And we love you. And, oh, gosh. Heart. That's the stuff that, you know, when you don't get to do a show, we don't get to do a show like we didn't get to do a show last night, that's the reason you sit around and you go, dang it. Because we miss you guys. Let's go to the phones. David in Tennessee. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Well, hello, Bob. How's it going?
It's going.
It sounds pretty good to me, and I'm like the last nice lady. I'm all in favor of politics with Peter.
Yes, indeed.
Or Peter, a Peter on politics, or something like that. Anyway, I know I'm getting close to the edge. She's headed for the dump button now. All right, I'll quit, Agnes. You can quit now, Agnes. I want everybody to make sure they remember that the attack on Obama being available now. Carl Rove doing his little skit.
Did you see that thing, David?
Yeah, I watched about 15 seconds of it, and then, you know, I've just been recently blessed with a flat screen, and I was about to beat my monitor senseless, so I decided to not get out the Elvis gun. But the three things, and it's a very unholy trinity, but it's all scripted, Bob. It is scripted. The little Carl Rove routine, the attack on Obama, and the decoration of the Tuskegee Airmen. That's all on purpose. You got the good cop, bad cop. You got George taking the high road, the other thing disguised as comedy, and then the brutal, unsheathed knife right in the gut. It's all on purpose, and every bit of it is timed to within an hour of its occurrence. You hinted at it, but I want everybody to know that's the truth. That's the truth as
Well, you know, sometimes I feel a little paranoid. Like, you know, if I open the
window,
I'll hear the black helicopters, you know, over the roof outside.
There's no whoop-whoop-whoop noise, no tinfoil helmet required. And there's one other little juxtaposition that I've just got to offer up. And I got to establish where this came from. We've got that hideous Max thing essentially claiming Obama's not really quite truly genuinely black, and therefore it's horrific that there's this woman that he's, quote, hiding, right?
Yeah, and what makes, and just to interrupt for a minute, what makes me crazy about all of that is that, I mean, these are right-wingers. These are the worst of the worst. These are the people who would go on voting for George Bush as maximum dictator for life, no matter how bad everything else got in America, okay? So that's the people he's writing to. And, you know, let's not kid ourselves. He is actually out there complaining that Obama is not black enough, as if Obama were a little bit blacker, he could somehow be persuaded to vote for him.
Oh, you know, and just as an aside, before I get to the little thing I want to build up here, that woman was what, in her 80s, that is supposedly being held captive in an apartment in Hawaii, right?
Yeah, probably. Has to be in her 80s, if not her 90s.
All right, Obama's mid-40s, two generations, 20 a pop, that makes it mid-80s. How likely is it that frail woman said, "Oh, I've heard about political campaigns. You fellas, I don't care what you say or how you do it. I don't want anybody within 100 yards of me asking anything of me. You boys understand that?" And everybody associated with that woman's well-being said, "Nobody will get near you." So, as far as I'm concerned, that's the likely occurrence.
Well, you know, you're 85, 86, 87, 90 years old, David. And suddenly you've got the 19 satellite trucks that just got released from Anna Nicole Smith duty outside your apartment building.
Yeah, and they've been on the road for 2 weeks covering that, so they're, you know, they still have bloodlust for the hot shot.
Right, and they're, you know, and they're sitting in the hallway of your apartment building munching on delivery pizza and carry out Chinese, and you know, if you open the door to letting the cat.
Yeah, there's a 3,000-watt quartz light in your face going, "What do you think about da-da-da-da-da-da?" All right, well, let's let that go for a second.
All right.
Newsmax says Barack Obama's not black enough. The Republican Party as constituted today is the party of bigotry, racism, and the inheritor of the outlook that says slaves are okay. Am I correct in that?
So far, you're batting 1,000.
All right, I give as in evidence Strom Thurmond walked through broken glass to become a Republican, right?
Right.
Okay. We've got these two pillars of this. We've got the two sides of this arch, the keystone to this. And, Bob, I know you'll remember this. How many times have you heard the wrong kind of Southerner say, "I don't care how much, son, one drop makes him..."
Oh.
You know where that's coming from, and now then, after 150 years of saying that should a hard-working, caring, giving, honest man have one drop of black blood in him, he needed to go to the other side of the tracks, college wasn't available, take a $3 pay cut when wages were $5, and now then, they have the gall to say Obama's not a real black man. What the hell kind of flip is that one, Bob?
There's psychology in this, and our psychologist buddy might be able to opine via email or phone call at some point. There's psychology in this that is forward psychology, reverse psychology, oblique psychology, psychology from a tangent that takes calculus to fully relate, because it's about by pointing out his. Attempt to... I'm sorry, this is going to seem terribly convoluted, and I'm trying to make sense of it. When a right-wing outfit like Newsmax points out that Obama is not black enough, what they're actually pointing out is that Obama is, by God, black. You know, because we all know that there's a strong chance that the Republicans have lost the evangelicals for the 08 cycle, so they're not going to be able to gin up that base as easily as they have in the past. Okay, so they've got to work other angles, and this is in the same bed with Jungle Drums on the Bob Corker ads. You've got to point out, in case there's anybody out there, you know, those so-called moderates, those middle of the road voters, those people that that every election is geared toward, and frankly that I think don't exist, but still they play to them, and what they're trying to point out is, you know, dang it, he's black.
Be afraid. Be very afraid. He's just black enough to injure an old white woman.
Yeah. I mean,
But just getting back to my original point and latching on to that flipping around of that horrific thing that you and I heard starting before we knew what words were. You've heard the one-drop rule. I've heard the one-drop rule. We know that in the heart of the Republican Party, it's valid. It's no more than fourth or fifth down the list of things that matter to them. Am I right in that?
No, you're absolutely right.
Thank you.
And, you know, you'd never catch them. You won't catch them admitting it up front. But how much more admission do you need between the absolute? Was I wrong in calling that minstrelsy what went on last night?
No, you were not. And the only thing. You know, I'm not so sure that if Rove had done it in blackface, it wouldn't have made it more acceptable, because it would have been even more totally outlandish, and it would have been a total put down on him. No, it's that we're so cool and we're so good, we can do this. Now, besides, we paid a black man an outrageous amount of money to come on stage with us and ruin his career. I don't think that fellow that was on stage with him will be looking toward the Apollo for a gig anytime soon.
Well, you know, and the opening line of the whole Rove thing was something about Rove so white. Yeah, do these people not understand that this? You know, I'm not the humor police, okay? Not at all. But this stuff doesn't.
Neither am I. I'm perfectly capable of making a relatively rude joke, but.
But this doesn't play, and it doesn't play in particular in a political forum. This was an attempt to show the urban community that, you know, we're Republicans, but we are down with you. Yo. You know, how can you put, you remember Richard Pryor, God rest his soul, when he would do that white person voice?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm not sure if this is really, can you break a black person? You know, when he was doing the black cop.
Yeah,
I've got it right. Yeah, partner, I've got it right here in the book. Yep, right there, section 502, sub C, subsection 2i-1, you can break a black person. He would do all of that, and those were the people that he was doing in that. Those were the people up there hooting and hollering, and the little radio and TV correspondents politely clapping and chuckling in the background. That's who Richard Pryor was talking about.
No doubt about it. And all of those people that were laughing, at some level, consciously, in some cases, subconsciously, they were laughing at, as in put down laugh, black people or anybody of color, any minority. Republicans don't like minorities. They like rich white people.
Well,
they like rich white people that have never worked. That's my base. George told us so.
Yeah, some people call you the have more, the haves and the have mores. I call you my base.
Precisely.
Ugh.
Well, you know, I've made enough noise for one night. I'm getting out of the way. You know, I've calmed down enough. You've let me vent. My new flat screen's not going to be beaten up for fear of going nuts on it. So, just so I don't stumble across Rove doing his whatever he was doing. Ugh.
Yeah, what was that?
No, let's not go there. If you and I become descriptive, this program's in serious trouble.
I fear that you're quite correct. Just, you know, if you see Barack's grandma out there, David, if you see her out there, give her a crust of bread or something, because, well, she spends all that time in that dungeon.
Yeah, based on the horrors the poor woman is experiencing, I expect to see her on a milk carton within about 10 days.
Yeah, he won't let the mainstream media torment her. What kind of grandson is he?
Hey, I'm 20 years younger and, you know, potentially much more capable of taking care of myself. I don't want the mainstream media anywhere in the city limits of where I live.
You let that little weasel George Stephanopoulos around me, and I swear I'll tire iron him, Barack. I will tire iron him.
Oh, well.
He may be, you know, he may be protecting the media from her.
Thank you.
That's
more like it.
She's a tough old lady who got through, who was born during the depredations of Republican presidencies in the 20s, grew up and was a child during the Depression.
She probably told Barack, don't make me have to come out on that front porch and teach those boys a lesson.
Yeah.
That's probably more like it.
Let's not pretend that generation was ever in its life any sort of a shrinking violet. If she wanted to talk to the media, you can bet by God, David, she would talk to the media. But, you know, that's me. And Agnes just hung up on David. Too many buttons. Let's go to another call from the great state of Tennessee. Brian. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Good to hear you again, Bob.
Thanks. Glad to know you called.
Okay. Since we're talking about race, I wanted to talk about the phrase playing the race card. You know, I hate that phrase because it implies trickery, sleight of hand, you know, that just to bring up the topic of racism, your argument is automatically out the window. And it's like, do you remember when Nancy Pelosi, when they gave her that plane she didn't ask for? And she said, look, I don't know what the names of the planes mean or whatever, yada, yada. And then at the end she said, of course, as a woman, I don't think I should get any less than my predecessor. And that's what they jumped all over, even though it was just a footnote. And MSNBC, which is, you know, I think at least a little better than the other ones on TV, there was a woman on there saying, you know, this is just ridiculous that Nancy Pelosi is playing the gender card. You know, she's the most powerful woman. As if, you know, oh, we have a female Speaker of the House. What more do you want? As if that's like the be-all and end-all of women's rights movement when women are 51% of the population and look at Congress, you know. But it's like they're trying to create an equivalent to Godwin's law. You know what Godwin's law is?
Yes, I do. That's the
phenomenon. Yeah.
It essentially says that any internet discussion thread will eventually degrade to the point that someone gets accused of being a Nazi or Hitler, and
it says that if you make a reference to Nazis or the Holocaust, then your argument is automatically thrown out the window. And there's some truth to that. You know, even if you say that George Bush is the grandson of a Nazi collaborator. Even though Prescott Bush was actually convicted under the Trading with the Enemies Act, you know, that's ridiculous. Come here, Nazis. Well, they're trying to make an equivalent to apply to race and gender so that if you even bring up the topic of race and gender, then your argument is automatically out the window. And, you know, libertarian Republicans, and that's an oxymoron in and of itself. I can see some similarities between traditional conservatives and libertarians, but the modern Republican Party... nothing at all alike. But when, you know, libertarians have some great ideas in theory, but it doesn't work in reality. I mean, they act like when civil rights is passed, there's no residual effects, you know, no hangover of the economic inequalities. And so it's just like, okay, civil rights is passed, racism is over now. Don't talk about it. And so...
Well, I've got a soundbite from Tony Snow where he says that racism is only a memory. And that, you know, that's how that, okay, we don't have to deal with it in the here and now. It's not really real. It's only a memory. You know, those were the things that they did back then. You know, Bull Connor had dogs and fire hoses, but that's not now.
Yeah, it's 2007. It's the 21st century. I mean, come on, get with it. And, you know, it's like, but when they say, you know, playing a card, it suggests, like, you know, some sleazy street carny. I mean, no offense to carnival workers, you know, like, hey, guess which cup the walnut shell is under? What'd you say, middle one? No, it's the right one. Sorry, you lose. What's no double or nothing?
Exactly. And it implies that this is nothing but trickery. It implies that it's at the bottom. It implies that this is nothing but a game. It takes away the life and death struggle of the nature that is that or should be our body politic. Because, you know, it's just a game. Oh, he just played the race card. He just said that because he's that color, or he's got or she's got that kind of reproductive plumbing. You know, at the end of the day. Brian, how shallow is it? How short-sighted? How simple-minded is it that these Republicans and these so-called conservatives will judge a person by how they have sex, by what kind of genitalia they have, by the color of their skin, and will not, for the life of them, judge a person by the merits of their actions or their talents?
But they act like we're the racists. To acknowledge or the sex, whatever, just to acknowledge it.
Oh, I know. I can hear
go ahead.
No, I can hear the little right wingers out there going, what about Colin Powell? What about Condoleezza Rice? What about Alberto Gonzalez? See, George Bush isn't racist.
Well, affirmative action is racist. They'll say, oh, Congressional Black Caucus. Yeah, where's the Congressional White Caucus? It's called Congress.
Exactly.
And, you know, this, oh, well, you know, it's like with Stephen Colbert when he says, well, they say I'm a white man. I take their word for it. I don't see race.
I've seen him say that. That just breaks me up. Brian, so good to talk to you, man. I hope we'll hear from you again soon.
Also, speaking of Godwin's Law, did you hear about what Tom DeLay said in his new book?
Oh, yeah. That
comparing us to Nazis for what he's had to go through?
Yeah, because he got indicted for being a crook. That makes everybody who thinks he's a crook a Nazi.
He's comparing himself to victims of the Holocaust. I mean, talk about delusions of grandeur. And there's a right-wing talk show host, and I'm not going to give him the satisfaction of even dropping a name, not going to advertise, but he says that if you talk to a liberal for more than 5 minutes, they will inevitably resort to using the word Nazi, because that's all they have. So does this mean that Tom DeLay is a liberal? I'm confused here.
Oh, God.
All right, I'll let you go.
Oh, I've got to take my medicine after something like that. Brian, thanks so much.
Good to hear from you, Bob.
Good to talk to you. Later. And it is half past the hour. And never mind the break. We've got on the line with us a very good friend of the program, Jeff Biggers, author of The United States of Appalachia, a profound book. Jeff, are you there?
Yeah, good to be with you, Bob. Stirring up some trouble.
You know, we do that from time to time. But I'm tickled to death to have you on because it really pleased me when I heard from you that the United States of Appalachia has gone into a paperback printing. Is that right?
Yeah, it definitely has. I think the publisher's been very happy. I think it's gone through actually more than one run, and now we're in paperback. And I think we're really hoping with the cheaper issue of the paperback, we can get it to even more people and out to even more communities and schools and whatnot, and, you know, really get the message out there.
Has anything changed? Any epilogue or update or anything?
No, there were a couple of, you know, heirs, of course, the historical heirs from Charlestown to Charleston, things like that, and a couple of counties. I think you even pinned out a detail. We had the wrong county with W.C. Handy about being the father of the blues down there in Alabama. But for the most part, it's remained the same, and I think we've just been very happy that in terms of the academic community, the book has really held up, and it's been very much embraced by folks like the Appalachian Studies Association. And then nationwide, I think it's really been a shocker for many people to sort of have a lot of the pedestals from the eastern seaboard and the larger urban areas up north realize that we have this region in our country that we've always sort of dismissed and laughed at, that in fact has been way ahead of us in many of our social justice movements and just the progressive movements at large in America.
In so many ways, Jeff, this region is in fact, and I think you more than any other book that I've ever seen, you point out so very well that this region is the crucible of just about everything that we hold dear in this country. whether it be music, whether it be poetry, whether it be activism. You know, for some reason, I started the program tonight dealing with racial issues and the GOP. The objection to all of the stuff that I'm still objecting to was born in the Appalachians, and you more than anyone else have in this book really brought that to life.
You know, and I think it's just a lot of great research there that we've got to uncover and get beyond a lot of the stereotypes that you have, especially with the issue of race and ethnicity. I mean, when we think of the mountaineer, we think of the so-called hillbilly, the redneck racist. You know, we don't realize how much that has been engineered, how much we've been taught to think that way. And of course, you know, you have redneck racists everywhere, and you have it in my neck of the woods up here in the Midwest. It's not like the South have cornered the market. But if we really start looking at history, and we see that, in fact, the first abolitionist newspaper came out of the backwoods of eastern Tennessee, and that so many of the anti-slavery societies were down here, and that the people living on the front line, you know, have confronted these kind of social injustices and move forward. And that's really what my book talks about, is Appalachia has been the front lines. It's been the burning ground of so much American history. And, of course, it hasn't been a majority of people, but a sizable minority of people who have served as the catalyst for the country to really push us forward and attack issues like racial discrimination or some sort of degradation of the environment or some kind of beautiful endeavors in music and literature.
You know, you mentioned the environmental aspect, Jeff. To the extent that the civil rights movement really got its birthing in the hills of Appalachia, it strikes me that as we move forward into the 21st century, we're seeing a new birth of, and frankly, I don't mind calling it a civil rights issue, in terms of how we deal with our carbon based energy the energy infrastructure, because the death and the destruction is happening every day here in Appalachia, and it's fueling growth, and it really is growth of a sort all over the Southeast and all over the Northeast and into the Midwest, and it's the folks here like the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, the Highlands Conservancy, Coal River Mountain Watch, my dear friends, that are bringing that change about.
Exactly, and once again, it doesn't have to be. I think we've seen in history a huge majority of people, but that a dogged group of folks who believe in what they're doing, know what's right, and have pushed forward. And I think that's what we're seeing in the mountain top removal movement, that there has been people who are just not going to give up until we stop this practice. But I think, Bob, what I've learned on my travels, I've been in 25 states pitching this book, from the East Coast to the West Coast to the major urban centers and every darn back road in the South. And what I've realized, too, is why we have to know our heritage and why we need to know our history is precisely because of the environmental movement today. That if you look at a people as disposable, a people who don't matter, if you look at people as sort of white trash hillbillies, you know, that we can push around and politically have no power, people who are beheld to the interest of huge multinational corporations or the big coal companies, then you feel like you can do anything you want to their land. And I tell everybody, I was down in Big Stone Gap just a week ago talking to children, and I said, look, you know, my grandfather was a coal miner. You know, first they took his lungs. He barely survived a cave-in. In fact, the company doctor didn't even bother to get all the coal out of his face. So as children, we grew up counting the pieces of coal still embedded in his head, and eventually died of black lung. Well, just, you know, a few decades later, they came and strip-mined our holler, and all of our history and heritage, our lifestyle was gone. And I think there was this sense of, we can push these people around, we can take advantage of them as laborers, and now we'll take their land. And I feel like that is very much what brings the environmental movement together with the historical and cultural movement and coal communities, that they realize that they have a lot in common.
Well, you know, there's an extension to what you say, though, Jeff, because if you can go in and you can, because what you're talking about, let's be plain about it, you're talking about doing this to other Americans.
Right.
If you're willing to do this to other Americans, what are you willing to do to the rest of the world?
All right, exactly. Yeah, and I think it does come down to an issue of human rights. You know, I think I always laugh when we use the word environmentalist, because I feel like it's a misnomer. I mean, we all love the land. I don't know any hunter that doesn't love the land more than anybody. I don't know anybody, you know, frankly, I don't know how many coal miners I know who have a tomato patch in their backyard and love on the weekends to go hunting. you know, we all love the land, and so to use the word environmentalist as a dirty word to me is a misnomer. I feel like it's an issue of human rights, and it's an issue of rights on how we protect our communities and the environment around them. And therefore, once again, it is, I think what you're talking about is a human rights issue of how we treat people.
Yeah, to say that this is an environmental issue as opposed to a human rights issue is to say that Rosa Parks' protest was about transportation.
Exactly. Very good.
And of course, and I turn it in her direction just because, you know, not to give all the secrets of the book away, the things that have changed America that you point out in your book that got their roots in Appalachia, you know, they didn't happen in a vacuum. You know, Rosa Parks' feet were not sorer on Thursday than they were on Wednesday. Her back didn't hurt a little bit more on Thursday than it did on Wednesday. It was a conscious decision that she had been led to and trained to and helped to by the Highland School.
Right, precisely by a bunch of, you know, self-proclaimed radical hillbillies. You know, the story is that just a few months before she refused to give up her seat, she took a seat at a training school in the Eastern Tennessee Mountains at a place called Highlander that eventually became really the training ground for the shock troops of all the civil rights movement. And it's there that, you know, Appalachians had started this book school in 1932 to work with laborers and farmers in really one of the most deforested and destroyed counties in all of the South. It was Grundy County in Eastern Tennessee. In fact, they went there specifically to work with people who were completely dispossessed. The idea was we as a community have the wherewithal to be in charge of our destiny, to create sustainable communities. And so they first worked with laborers. They first worked the labor movement, the farm worker movement, and it was always integrated. From day one, you had black and white sitting together, sleeping together, you know, being around the same dinner table. And it's there that Rosa Parks came, you know, in the fall of 1955, and it wasn't that she needed an impetus to do what she did. She said, I finally met white people I trusted. You know, and that's what really gave her the sense of security that she could go back to Montgomery and eventually do what she did. And I think it's largely because of this incredible tradition of activism in Appalachia. Of course, the first school to desegregate in the South was a little mountain community in the Cumberlands down there in Tennessee.
It is amazing that we're not talking about a 900 page book here, Jeff, but your book is dense with this kind of information, and I encourage everybody to get their hands on it. You say that you've been traveling around 25 states all over the South. Where are you headed next?
I'm going to be doing a lot of things here in the Midwest now, around Chicago, and then in my own neck of the woods, Southern Illinois and Missouri. And then I go out for a western swing for a lot of April back into the western states and California. And I purposely, Bob, have gone outside the region a lot just to say, hey, you know, we've got to get beyond regionalizing Appalachia, that only people in the region want to read about it. You know, if you want to talk about the Southwest and environmental activism, you always have to invoke Edward Abbey, you know, who said wilderness needs no defense, it needs more defenders. But I think most environmental activists don't realize that Ed was talking about Appalachia, where he had grown up. And he was talking specifically about the Smoky Mountains, which were being devastated by tourism even way back then, 40 years ago. It was being devastated by tourism 100 years ago. And in fact, a lot of my travels in the southern Appalachian areas outside of the coal fields, really, you know, tourism and reckless development is just another form of mountaintop removal down there. You have this incredible movement now of overdevelopment and gated communities.
Pigeon Forge.
Oh, yeah, and just goes on and on and on, even in the Carolinas. But once again, I've been trying to bring this message to the West that, you know, we have a lot to learn from this region of players who've left the Appalachians and gone on to change the way we've lived in other parts of the country, you know, be it into Detroit and the incredible role of Appalachians who poured into those factories, including people like Walter Reuther, of course, who came out of West Virginia,
right,
to people like Cormac McCarthy, who was just picked by Oprah a couple of days ago, who's really the mythos of his work, the language of his work, comes out of his Eastern Tennessee and Appalachian background.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, in many ways, east of the Mississippi, if you flip on a light switch, if you go to turn your computer on and the darn thing fires up, then to sort of paraphrase John F. Kennedy, ich bin ein Appalachian.
Right.
Because it's the Appalachians that are in large part making that happen. So to the extent that you're able to convey that message, I can't imagine a more important one as you know as we look into the front end of the 21st century, because frankly something's got to give, Jeff, doesn't it?
I think so, and I'm an incorrigible optimist. I feel like on a nationwide level, things are changing. You know, really, I felt, you know, we talked a year ago, and just in this last year, I think from all the chaos that is happening now, engineered by the White House, you do have people afoot in the United States who realize that change has to begin locally, that we have to begin looking at the global situation within our regions and then beyond our regions. You know, and I think there's an incredible movement now, for example, of how we eat, and you have so many books now dealing with eating locally, eating regionally, having sustainable agriculture, once again looking at alternative energy and renewable energy sources to get off the addiction of energies that really are no longer renewable and usable. And I think, and once again, looking at beyond our borders so we start recognizing other cultures. I think part of this book of mine is to basically help shatter a lot of those borders that we've dealt with, that we need to look beyond our typical provincialism and, for example, getting beyond pigeonholing Appalachia as just sort of this backwoods area where nothing has ever changed.
Well, do you ever run across anybody who says that who takes issue with your message or with the substance of your book, or is it almost uniformly positive?
I think it's been very gratifying, but at the same time, I've had to work like a dog to be taken seriously. And that's a very funny thing to say as a journalist if you go and do your research. I never for a minute thought I'd have trouble pitching this book. I thought it'd be one of those books that people say, oh, you know, it's, you know, just as I've written books about Mexico and India and whatnot, you know, let's read about the South. But it's been very interesting to see the trivialization of Appalachia. And give you an example. I was supposed to go to Chicago in February, and they called me back and said, can you come in April? And I said, sure, but why can't I come in February? And they said, well, it's Black History Month. And you wrote that book about those people down there, and you wouldn't really fit in. And I paused for a minute and said, well,
oh my God,
do you know Black History Month was started by a black Appalachian coal miner from West Virginia? You ever heard of Carter Woodson, who put himself through school as a coal miner in West Virginia? They went to Berea. He wrote his dissertation at Harvard on the African and slavery experience in Appalachia, and he went off to Howard, but Howard, eventually he lost his job there, and the only people who give him a job was a little college in West Virginia where he began and kept working on this Journal of Negro History and Negro History Week, which became Black History Month. You know, and you could just go on and on. You ever heard of Booker T. Washington or the black nationalist Martin Delaney, who walked out of the West Virginia mountains, became very instrumental in our civil rights movement as early as the Civil War period as a black nationalist, and Nina Simone and Bessie Smith, and just on and on. And so once you sort of hit people with the truth, with the factual evidence of history that's been neglected, they start to take you seriously. But Bob, to be honest with you, they still wouldn't invite me to Black History Month.
Oh God, we've got a gentleman here in my area who does a beautiful one man show. He's a local poet. And he does a one-man show on Carter Woodson, and it is I was privileged to be part of a little presentation about 9 months ago, where he did his performance art, and Carter Woodson's story alone is worth a book.
Exactly, many books, and you know, and I feel, for example, I often feel guilty of the fact that if I get any criticism at all, it's often, how come you didn't put in X, Y, and Z in your book? And, of course, my book is really a tenth or a fraction of what I should have included, but just, you know, at a certain point, you have to turn off the faucet. And to me, that's the great problem of what I'm dealing with, is there's just so much more to mine, so much more to really read about and understand and really talk about of this incredible wealth of people who've come out of this region, you know, and really how they, as Thomas Wolfe said, how they've come down from the hills and changed our great American destiny.
Oh, and that's from Look Homeward, Angel, isn't it?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And I tell you, just to interrupt there, that's been sort of my message, is that, you know, what I need folks to do in Appalachia and the South is to not so much buy the book, but send the book to someone outside the region.
Hear, hear.
Who would just never believe it, you know, who needs to discover another Appalachia. And think about it, Bob, during my tour,
You know, we have the governor of New York saying, oh, my God, New York is starting, upstate New York is starting to look like Appalachia. And he doesn't realize that upstate New York is in Appalachia to begin with. But once he gets his geography right, you know, his idea is Appalachia is a singularly poverty. And we have Neil Young going on Saturday Night Live doing Appalachian ER, you know, with the horrible hillbilly teeth that you buy at a bad Chinese restaurant.
I know.
And so it just goes on and on. And so it almost seems the point is anachronistic to have this kind of message. But at the same time, I feel like at the end of the day, our kids still are not getting the truth. They're not getting the real history in their schools. And readers across the country still need to be surprised by this incredible history.
Jeff, I'm glad you mentioned what you just did, because I was sitting, I listen to other programming as well as the stuff we produce here on the Horn, and I was listening last night to another show, and a promo was running, and it said, and I don't even remember what it was about, but I wondered after I heard it if I was being overly sensitive or if I had a right to be just a little bit ticked. With the characterization, blah, 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 and our soldiers driving around in hillbilly armored Humvees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do we call it hillbilly armored now because we can't say rigged?
Right.
You know
exactly.
What I mean?
Exactly. You know, and I think my thing is that I don't think there's anybody in the region who has a hang up about the hillbilly word or whatnot, but it's the connotation of the word. I mean, if anybody you know about Appalachians is they have a great sense of self-humor a great sense of self-deprecating humor. But it's the idea is when you have that caricature that exclusively defines these people, that exclusively defines anything that's deficient, you know, that this doesn't work, therefore it's Appalachian. This doesn't work, therefore it's a hillbilly thing. You know, therefore if our soldiers are underfunded, it's a hillbilly military. You know, once again, the bizarre distortion of the truth, the bizarre distortion of what really is valuable, and especially within the war sense, you know, what region has produced more people and given up their lives for the cause from the American Revolution on than the Appalachian South? And that's, to me, one of those very strange distortions using that word.
Indeed, it's the image of a fellow with holes in his overalls and maybe a patch and check gingham shirt and a funny looking straw hat and his corncob pipe in his mouth turned upside down and speaking a version of English that nobody can understand because it's actually Elizabethan and being ignorant and stupid and gullible. And you know, the guy, I guess maybe part of the gullibleness got its genesis in the fact that a lot of hill folk got their land stolen from them for a piece of paper, a pen, and a jug of corn liquor at the rise of the railroad and mining booms. I mean, is that where it comes from?
Bob, it really dates back to the mid-19th century when in this sort of boom of travel journalism, my profession, you know, they sent people out to find stories about strange people in peculiar regions, you know, and Appalachia being so close in the mountains, the caricature was there and had been there for a long time. You know, one thing we don't realize is the Rip Van Winkle story, which had been saddled on to the Appalachian backs and actually uses the word Appalachia by Washington Irving, is about upstate New York. It's not about the South.
Right.
And so with this kind of caricature, which is very, very old, was really to anybody who would live in the backwoods, be it North or South. And then you had this huge onslaught of stories in the 1870s and 80s and 90s. At the same time, you have these incredible Appalachian writers like Rebecca Harding Davis saying, hey, this is the burning ground of America. This is where the great social change is happening. Those same magazines were publishing story after story, you know, inventing this strange world of strange people who are lazy moonshining, you know, feuding hillbillies. And those same writers went all around the world doing this to other regions. And so it's what we're dealing with today is sort of a 125-year-old hangover. And that, you know, the mass media still can't seem to shake. I mean, there's been three horror films just in the last 3 months that deal with some sort of monster or inbred cannibal in the backwoods of West Virginia. You know, just sort of when in doubt, the mass media, you know, kicks into the caricature that's been going on for 150 years.
Well, and then there's Deliverance.
All right. And that was just, amazing distortion, really, once again, of the mountaineers in North Georgia.
I had a dear friend who went down to the Sugar Bowl 2 years ago when it was held in Atlanta because of what had happened with Katrina, and of course the West Virginia Mountaineers played Georgia. And the Mountaineer fans were just dogged the whole time they were there by the hillbilly stereotype and name calling, and you know, do you wear your shoes when you're home too? And at some point, my buddy was sitting in the stands, and somebody made a deliverance remark, and bless their hearts, I guess they'd been waiting for it, because they turned and said, "Dummy, that's about Georgia."
Right.
But it's a horrifying stereotype, and it's one that and I guess, you know, by virtue of that remark in that promo about, you know, up armored hillbilly Humvees or whatever, it's we're one of the last of the population groups or regional segments of the population that you can openly make fun of and get away with it.
Exactly. And once again, I don't, you know, there's part of that humor which is self-induced, and I think a lot of it is there's a reason for it, because once again, if you dismiss people, if you trivialize people, if you make people disposable, then eventually you're going to talk about having toxic waste dumps in West Virginia that had been brought up not too long ago. You're going to talk about, you know, lack of enforcement of laws in the coal mines and the slurry ponds and things like that. And, you know, to me, it's, in the end, the humor isn't benign, because it's always linked to some other encroachment. And also, at the end of the day, I tell a lot of people this. You know, I've really taken up the charge of taking on Larry the Cable Guy. You know, here's this kid, an affluent kid from Nebraska, the son of a music academy, you know, extremely educated, who admittedly puts on this southern accent because it sells in Nashville, and New York picked up on it, and he can make money on it. And so at the end of the day, is that the redneck you want your kid to be put to bed with? Is that the extent of your history and culture? Is some boy from the Midwest who's affluent, who's mocking you and making millions of dollars off it? You know, once again, is it so benign? You know, sure, we all have great redneck jokes. We all grew up with that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, what are we going to tell our kids? And what are our kids going to go to bed thinking about themselves, their history, their heritage, and what's going to happen to them in the future of people who are moving in and once again taking the land for whatever reason or destroying the land? And that really has turned me into a social crusader with this book, is I realized I couldn't just simply put it out there and hope the critics would deal with it. I really need to go out and push it to say, hey, we've trivialized this region for too long. And we need to get over our urban provincialism here in the North and the Midwest and elsewhere in the country, and recognize that a place we have long considered to be in the backwash of history has been way ahead of us in virtually every great hinge movement in American history, be it with an indigenous people, the American Revolution, the abolitionist movement, the various labor movements, the civil rights movement, and this incredible treasury in America of music and literature.
Jeff, I got a quick question from a listener via the phone, who sure wanted to know if you're familiar with a writer artist by the name of R.B. Morris.
R.B. Morris, I'm trying to think who that is.
I don't have the answer. That was just the question passed along. Apparently, some connection to Appalachia, but
right. No, R.B. Morris, I believe, is a singer songwriter, but I'm just trying to think of it. Rings a bell. I think it's sort of, if I remember, he's the Knoxvillian who plays folk and country music, but I'm just trying to think. I do follow a lot of music, but perhaps your person who called in could help us with that.
I'll shoot you an email and yeah, update you. I'm so proud of what you're doing, Jeff. It stirs my heart. When I was broadcasting from my father's home in Alabama for a couple of months, a month ago and a year ago, for a variety of reasons, I always mentioned that, you know, and I was right down there in the Shoals, you know, Lauderdale County, home of W.C. Handy, Helen Keller, and I always tried to make mention of the fact, you know, down in the last little low knee hills of the Appalachians, because they really do, they end right there.
Mm-hmm.
And they roll out into flat land, but as a region, to see
to see what all has come out of it, whether it's Handy or whether it's Helen Keller, who never saw it but certainly felt it all the way to her soul and was moved into the workers' rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
By the impact of other Appalachians, among other people. It's stirring, and of course you consider where West Virginia is, the beyond the Piedmont in Virginia. That was the path that America took to get to Chicago, to get to Kansas City, to get to Dallas.
Right.
How many of the great founding fathers of Texas claimed roots that went back into old Virginia?
Right. Well, beginning with Sam Houston of the Eastern Tennessee Mountains, for example.
Right.
Right.
And so, you know, we are this. It is the United States of Appalachia. The title of your book is more apt than perhaps even you recognize. Mm-hmm. But right. I hope that folks will go out and send a copy to your aunt in Oshkosh, or make sure that somebody in L.A. gets a hold of this, because it really is the footprint and the way forward. For our entire national experience as we move into the 21st century. And Jeff, I consider you a very dear friend of this program, and I thank you so much for taking time to talk to us. Let me ask you before we go, how's your other book doing? How's In the Sierra Madre coming along?
No, that's done well. It's been another interesting crusade as well, to get people to look south of the border, to realize that beyond sort of the badlands of Mexico, that there is this incredible wonder down there to discover, in other mountain cultures and mountain people in the wonderful Copper Canyon, Sierra Madre. So I'm having fun with that too. You know, I tell you, Bob, it's a pleasure to be on your radio program. I bumped into a guy, I forget where, out in the West, who's an avid listener of yours, and you know, to be at a book signing or a festival or where not, and have someone come up and say, "Hey, I heard you on Bob's show." It's always a thrill. So I'm always happy to come back on anytime, and appreciate what you're doing as well. I feel like we're in a good moment right now. I believe the House of Cards is coming down in many respects, in a lot of the incredible distortion and mistruths we've had for the past several years, coming out of both Washington and other places. And I feel like a lot of the truths are coming out, and that's thanks to people like yourself for the real reasons our investigative journalists are putting it on the airway.
Well,
thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you, Jeff. And you have you stay safe and travel well, and the very best with the book.
Okay. Take
Bye
care.
Now. Bye. Jeff Biggers, author of The United States of Appalachia. It's available now in paperback. It's more accessible now than it has ever been. If you go to the post for today's show at headonradionetwork.com, you can purchase it right there by clicking on the cover of the book. And many thanks to our News Ninja blogger extraordinaire Susan for getting that up there. And what Jeff said is so true. If you already know the story, if you know your heritage, if you know how valuable this, and I'm not talking valuable, you know, the people have looked at the Appalachian, you know, there's a lot of natural resource value in Appalachia. Give me a cigar and bring me a martini, would you? That's not the value of Appalachia. The value of Appalachia is the Appalachian people. And really, honest to God, Appalachian people exist far outside the territorial bounds of these, the oldest mountains in the world. Ich bin ein Appalachianer. Right? Right. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is The Horn. This is America's liberal voice, and I'm Bob Kincaid. Light up the phones if you want to. We got another hour to go. We'll come back after the news. Take your phone calls. If you're on hold, please stay. We'll be right to you. We'll be back. To take you and the sun to promised land, to show you everyone, it's the time of the season.
This is the Quality News Network.
Dozens of tornadoes from the Plain States to the Rockies have left destruction behind. At least 4 people are now reported dead. The massive spring storm system kicked up 65 reported tornadoes late yesterday. By today, it stretched from South Dakota to Texas. On Capitol Hill, the Democratic-controlled Senate today approved a war spending bill calling for a pullout date for U.S. troops from Iraq within a year. The vote was a narrow 51-47 and was mostly along party lines. President Bush continues to insist he will veto any legislation that contains language about a troop withdrawal. Republicans also criticize pork attached to the bill. Those are extras that request funding for things unrelated to war costs. Also on Capitol Hill today, Kyle Sampson, the former chief of staff to Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, voluntarily appeared before the Senate Judiciary Committee. He told the senators that the principals, referring to Gonzalez and Harriet Myers, the former White House counsel, had approved and signed off on the dismissals of 8 U.S. prosecutors. His testimony directly contradicts Gonzalez's early statements that he was not involved in what was going on. The situation between Britain and Iran escalated further today after Iranian leaders withdrew an offer to release the sole female captive. Britain took its case to the UN Security Council. It wants the unconditional release of the 15 naval personnel captured 6 days ago. The council agreed to a softer statement calling for an early resolution to the problem instead. Iran says the British crew was in its waters, not Iraqi waters. In and around Baghdad, 5 suicide bombers hit Shiite marketplaces, killing at least 122 people. They also wounded more than 150. It was one of the deadliest days Iraq has seen in years. And Congress honored the legendary Tuskegee Airmen today with a Congressional Gold Medal. The fighter pilots who made up America's first black air squadron distinguished themselves in World War II, even as they were discriminated against in the military and on the home front. In Mexico City, lawmakers are considering a proposal that would legalize most abortions in the capital city. Roman Catholic groups strongly oppose the legislation. Feminists say it would be a good move for women in Latin America.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and the victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of rancor. You got married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. CollaborativeDivorce.tv.
Researchers in Japan say they've developed an oral vaccine for Alzheimer's disease that may be ready for human clinical trials later this year. The researchers say the vaccine proved effective in mice in the early stages of the disease. They also say it returned their mental function to near normal levels in just 3 months' time with no side effects. The UN health organizations are recommending that heterosexual men become circumcised based on evidence that doing so reduces the risk of HIV by as much as 60%. According to a survey by Manpower, Inc., an employment staffing company, the top 3 jobs that employers are looking to find workers for right now are sales representatives, teachers, and mechanics. And it turns out that customer information from nearly 46 million credit and debit cards was stolen from the discount retailer TJ Maxx. That's a much higher number than the retailer had revealed 2 months ago. And Apple iTunes has introduced a new feature called Complete My Album. It allows users to receive full credit for previously purchased songs if they decide to purchase the entire album on its iTunes store sites. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $66.03 a barrel. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was up 48 points. The NASDAQ was up 1 point, and the S&P was up 5 points. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Christen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yeah, so we went to the news a little late. So what? 9.5 minutes after the hour, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. This is the Head On Radio Network. And a quick reminder to run over to our good friend Billy Shear's site at unreportednews.net, where this week's guest blogger is none other than my lovely, talented, darling wife, Agnes, whose photograph you will find there with a blinking neon light over it that says, "Delightfully yours." Yes, dear.
Head on over to Billy's site and take a look at his review of Time of the Seasons. Don't bother with mine, please.
Yeah, stop it, Agnes.
That's not photoshopped. It was just an accident. Thank you.
And she's delightfully mine. Yes, she is. Is that exciting? Did you hear the story in the top of the hour news that Japanese researchers may have discovered a vaccine for Alzheimer's disease? Do you realize how profound that is? Now, I'm sure that somewhere out there, somebody will be hollering. Well, no, I know. I'm certain of it. That if the American Family Association gets wind of this, they'll start a boycott movement or an email campaign to make sure it can never be sold in America. Because, you know, if the Alzheimer's patients got their memories back, they might want to have sex. You think? No, you know, that sounds a little over the top. That sounds a little unrealistic. That sounds downright insane and silly. But do you think they wouldn't? Yes. We must block the spread of the anti-Alzheimer's vaccine because senile homosexual Alzheimer's victims might get their memories back and remember that they're gay. I wish that was over the top. But you realize that there's even money that the religious right will find some reason to object to that drug. Well, I don't know. Maybe not, because maybe they could shoot up Charlton Heston with it, and he'd remember how to say, you can have my, well, I can't even do my Charlton. Get your hands off me, you damn dirty ape. No, you can have my gun when you pry it from my cold, dead fingers or something. Yeah, maybe they can dig up St. Ronnie. Ooh, I'm mean tonight. But if these people are willing to oppose something that will stop their own little girls from having their insides rotted with cancer, what will they do to America's aging population to help them get their lives back? Can you imagine a future where, what would that do to the nursing home population? Where maybe we can let our elderly live out their days among their loved ones instead of warehoused somewhere that smells like feces and urine. And I know many people who work in nursing home facilities, and they work hard, but they are routinely understaffed, overworked, and forced to deal with situations that are patently inhuman. So I don't look for it coming to a religion industry website near you. The Alzheimer's vaccine, immoral and unholy. Let's go to the phones and go up to Maine and our good buddy David, who's been waiting. Hey, David, welcome to the program. Thanks for waiting.
Good evening to you, Bob.
How are you?
I'm fine. I'd like to start out with a movie recommendation for everyone.
Okay.
Movie is Curse of the Golden Flower. It's Ying Mao's epic Chinese movie from 928. It takes place in 928 A.D., a little bit before the 80s, but...
That's dry humor.
I know. One of the amazing things about it, though, is is that it's the most it has the most actors, it's the biggest set ever on China in history. And he took 6 months to for pre-production and 6 months to film it. But what's amazing about it is like the battle scenes. There's an actual battle scene which they take 20,000 soldiers and they have cameras. I'm not kidding you. They have cameras set up, and I guess they had to CGI it even more because, like, again, this is an epic battle. But still, they had 20,000 soldiers in these highly decorated 80 to 60 pound armors and everything, and they just had them go at it with each other. And in the movie, what the movie is, it's about a royal family, and the golden jade that they're wearing is a symbol. You see the palace, you see everything beautiful, but inside the golden jade, inside the temple and everything, there's rotted decay everywhere. And the great thing about this movie is it's so detailed with every little thing of Chinese culture, the headdresses, the symbol of the phoenix, the symbolic meaning of the chrysanthemum. And I would just recommend people to run to your local rental place and to get Curse of the Golden Flower. Also, it beat Titanic in China.
Oh, wow.
It's a really amazing movie, and if anyone wants to check out the other work, I mentioned it before. There's House of the Flying Daggers, and there's Hero. You got to see if you're into martial arts and you're into epic period pieces, nobody tops this guy. Amazing. So there you go, Ying Mao's Curse of the Golden Flower. It's out this week.
Excellent. And out this week on video or
on DVD? Right.
On DVD. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And the next story that I was going to mention was, I was going to comment on the White House press corps dinner very briefly. I didn't find anything funny about the Roe thing, even though a lot of people were saying it's funny. I mean, I didn't find it funny. I thought the guy who wrote the rap, he really didn't try. It sounded like from 1982. It sounded worse than the Super Bowl shuffle.
Now, okay. All right. Now you've established a benchmark.
Yeah, I know. I know. I know you take the jobs where you can get them, but you know what struck me as odd? Not that Karl Rove dancing like that. Okay, I know he's mad, but what struck me as odd is why was David Gregory there laughing with Karl Rove?
It's just like when we played the audio of Ann Coulter's faggot comment. It's not the immediate effect of the words. It's the response of the audience. And with the Ann Coulter comment, David, after a while, after they got past the, she said that, oh, wait, nobody's watching, oh, that's funny, ha, 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 you know, and uproarious laughter, it's those titters of approval from the audience that are more disturbing to me than the overt racism of the GOP. David, I expect overt racism of the GOP.
Exactly.
But the audience, the people who were there, I mean, let's remember which dinner this was. This wasn't a meeting of the grand clavern of the DC clan. Although from the laughter you might have thought it was. This was the radio and TV correspondents' dinner. These are people who are supposed to be journalists. These are people who supposedly have covered the horrors of racism and war and death and misery.
I don't know how anyone could think it was funny dancing with a political. I'll call him alleged political and war criminal. I really just don't think it's funny. I think it's like dancing with hippity hopping with Joseph Goebbels or something.
Yeah, about the same thing. Yeah,
them
was some funny Nazis.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see it. I mean, I just saw that clip, and I just. To me, it was just, I don't know, there's so many things that I could take a spin on it. Like, for example, let's say that Karl Rove wasn't dancing. Let's say that let's say that Al Gore or somebody like that was dancing.
There we go.
I mean, if somebody like that was dancing, the CNN wouldn't be laughing or anything like that. Well, they might be, but I mean, there would be more of a, I can't believe somebody acted like the fool, but they're saying, oh, that Rove, he's the kidder.
He's such a card, boy, I tell you what. He's just a regular guy just like us, isn't he?
I mean, I really hope that they do find, I really hope they do find something on Rove, because he deserves to be out of office and deserves to get incriminated on something.
Well, did you see, David, did you see the front? I didn't play the front end of the whole thing. I just played the rap.
Right.
The part where the two not very comic comics were interviewing him, and he said, I like to go home and tear the tops off animals. Dude blew the punchline, for starters.
Yeah.
But, you know, we crucified John Kerry for that, blowing the punchline. On the other hand, I think in a way we saw the real Karl Rove. Nervous, socially inept, uncomfortable, not regarded well by his peers for his qualities as a human being, but rather for his qualities as a backroom fixer and a doer of dirty things.
You know what I think is the best punchline that I heard this week? U.S. is an illegitimate foreign occupation. Hey, yo. I mean, King Abdullah, man. He's right on it. He's got the perfect timing. He should have been invited to that, you know?
You know, that had to go over like a, well, like the baby,
well,
like the Baby Ruth scene in Caddyshack.
Did you see Nicholas Excellent Burns' reaction to it?
No.
He said, I'm surprised. I mean, that's all they could really say. There's nothing you can really say.
You know, the
and I mean, that message, I mean, I don't think people understand it. That message, you will never, ever get the trust of any Saudi Arabian ever again with America, for at least 100 years or something. As soon as the king comes out and says, you know, this is an illegitimate occupation.
Well, what is the ultimate? I mean, what is the impact of that, though, David?
I bet you it's happened. I bet you Fox is having a meeting. Now, you sure we don't have a news media outlet in Saudi Arabia? Oh, man, this is going to be hard to spend.
Well, look, George came out and said that the Democratic bill, that the two bills that have passed the House and the Senate, put our troops at risk. This is money for vital, much needed support. Has he got the stones, do you reckon, David, to call up King Abdullah and say, you've put our troops at risk? Because King Abdullah's words in describing the illegal and unjust occupation of Iraq, that's not even code anymore.
There's nothing you can even say to that. I mean,
he declared the effect of those words, David, is to declare open season on American soldiers on the part of the Sunnis.
Oh, exactly. And the thing that people have to keep in mind is that there's nothing that the White House can say or do with King Abdullah. They just have to take it. They just have to sit there and let him hammer on top of his head, on top of this administration's head, over and over and over. He can say anything he wants.
Well, he is, kind of.
Yeah,
because
he's saying anything he wants. That's why...
You know, that's Mel Brooks sitting there saying, hey, it's good to be the king.
Yeah, like that, too. You know, the thing is that all they could say was, well, I'm surprised by that. I'm really surprised by that reaction. And there's really nothing you can say at that point. I mean...
That is why, David, I have long held that where you look, for instance, at the hijackers of 9/11,
right,
we are never going to figure out why it happened as long as we view them as Al-Qaeda hijackers. They were Saudi hijackers, raised in Saudi society, in a culture that is absolutely bereft of any sort of moral or ethical regard for its own citizenry. The royal family and the upper middle class live literally like princes and princesses. And the poor of Saudi Arabia are among the absolute most abjectly poor on planet Earth. And it is that that gave rise to Mohammed Atta and the rest of that crowd. These guys were trained engineers. These were scientists. You know, these were people trained in the arts and the sciences and the mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, because of the bizarre state religion that obtains in Saudi Arabia, to wit, Wahhabism, they were able to believe, at the same time that they understood, because they were engineers, the very basic function of the material world, they were also able to believe, they knew that, but they were also able to believe that they would bypass any sort of limbo or purgatory or whatever and go straight to the 72 virgins if they only flew an aircraft into a building and screamed Allah Akbar while they did it.
You know, there's that misconception, that lie that everyone says. And, you know, I even catch some Democratic officials and pundits saying it with the people in caves restaurants. It's just so stupid. All you have to do is look and see what a lot of these terrorist backgrounds are from around the world, and you'll see that a lot of these are at least two or three school educated. Yeah, you got some stragglers, okay, but really, their army is a lot more savvy than people even want to give them credit.
Sometimes it makes me wonder if Richard Reed, remember the shoe bomber?
Oh, yeah.
With that dumbass look on his face. I think his face was splattered around for a reason, because we don't want, as Americans, to know that the people that allegedly hate us aren't a bunch of backwards idiots. These, you know, it's not the poor of the Middle East who are hell-bent on destroying us, if in fact they are. It is their upper class and their middle class, their well-educated classes. And that should be cause for alarm. That points out the wrong of what we've done over there and how we've done it wrong. So, because supposedly, if you're educated and you're well off, then you understand, you know, you're just like an American.
That's right, and I think that before I go, because I know you're running low on time, but I saw a photo. I mean, I didn't know this, but Wired has a Wired magazine has a blog with the defense blog, and I hate the word. You know, I hate the word defense. I hate these words, defense industry, because that means that there is never going to be an end to this industry, and there's always going to be an enemy, no matter what cost. But anyways, this guy put up this photo, and he thought it was funny. And I don't, and this just shows you the humor that people have that's, you know, so disconnected. It's supposed to be nonpartisan, but okay. Let's pretend that it is nonpartisan and it's on Wired or whatever. He has this picture of a Humvee, right? And it says, on the top of it says, Dukes of Fallujah. And it's photoshopped to be orange, and it has the Confederate flag on it. I responded on the blog. I was like, you know, this picture is the punchline itself. I mean, there's nothing you can say about it.
No.
I mean, they don't even understand. They don't even
there are times, David, when you look at this stuff and you're just kind of left going.
They don't even understand what the Confederate flag represents. To even say that, I mean, it just shows me exactly. Right where that mentality is, right where it's located. You don't have to say any words, just a little Photoshop, and I'm already, and you're already outed. That's it. Duke, I gotta show it to you, Bob. You're gonna go, I can't believe somebody.
Shoot it to me. Yeah, shoot it to me. I can't wait to see this.
Yeah, it's pretty embarrassing for America and for the Dukes of Hazzard.
Thanks, David. You have
All right,
a great
later,
night,
Bob.
Bye now.
Bye.
See, in this in the story that David was talking about King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia, the article I'm looking at is from the New York Times by Hassan M. Fattah. He did, in fact, call
This is at a meeting of, you know, the Arab leadership. The meeting was held in, of course, Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And he said that unless Arab governments settle their differences, foreign powers like the United States would continue to dictate the region's policies. This is the Arab League, mind you. So that would mean Jordan, arguably Iraq, Syria, Iran, Egypt, Yemen. I'm sure I'm missing one there. Is it Lebanon? Turkey? Don't know. Don't know if they're part of the Arab League. But at any rate, it's this statement he made, quote, in the beloved, and again, this is a quote from Arabic, so who knows? I don't trust the translations anymore. In the beloved Iraq, the bloodshed is continuing under an illegal foreign occupation and detestable sectarianism. Now, bear in mind, this all, you know, this isn't happening in a vacuum. This is part of something, because it was last week, according to the article, that King Abdullah canceled his appearance next month at a White House dinner in his honor. You know, this was going to be another opportunity for George and Abdullah to hold hands and kiss and walk off through the bluebells or something. He canceled. They didn't cancel him. The King of Saudi Arabia said thanks but no thanks to the Bush administration. What's the old phrase? Has the blush gone off the rose? You begin to wonder. But then, you know, just to sort of throw a bone to the administration, this next comment, after he said that the occupation was illegal and detestable, he also said, quote, "The blame should fall on us, the leaders of the Arab nation, with our ongoing differences, our refusal to walk the path of unity. All that has made the nation lose its confidence in us." He's only king of one country. What did he just say? He just said that he wants there to be one Arab nation. What was that referred to at the end of the First World War? Arab pan-nationalism? And that was sort of paid to by the Balfour Declaration. King Abdullah still wants to be king of all the Arabs. He wants to be, in a word taken from the Quran, the Caliph. Because you've got to remember, King Abdullah gets his marching orders from the Wahhabis. Now let's be straight. I don't like fundamentalist Christianity. I don't like fundamentalist Islam. I don't like fundamentalist Judaism. I don't like fundamentalist Jainism, Hinduism, any isms, because they're all daggum deadly. And they're not deadly just to each other. They're deadly to normal people like you and me. So King Abdullah gets his marching orders from some weirdo religious fundamentalist freaks who are trapped in the 7th century A.D., who believed that a dude got on a horse and flew to Jerusalem or heaven or somewhere. You know, just like in the Old Testament, it says the sun stood still in the sky, and that the equivalent of pi is 3.0. Freaks. This king of Saudi Arabia takes his marching orders from these Wahhabist freaks, and the Wahhabist freaks constantly say, "Oh, Majesty, the Mahdi cannot come back until such time as there is a single caliphate. And you look like the guy, Your Eminence, Your Holiness, Your Majesty, Your Serene Highness." He's sitting there next to the King of Jordan, next to the President of Syria, and he's telling them that they, by God, had best knuckle under
and create one Arab state. And then, but finally, as a bone to the Bush administration, this statement, as I said, the blame should fall on us, the leaders of the Arab nation, with our ongoing differences, our refusal to walk the path of unity. All that has made the nation lose its confidence in us. You know what that is? That's the guy walking out of the hospital and apologizing for getting in the way of Dick Cheney's shotgun blast. There's an illegal occupation, but it's our fault. Who pulled the trigger, Abdullah, buddy? You were all for this a little while back. You were wetting your bedsheets when you thought Saddam Hussein was going to come down the road at you. But now, and it is an illegal occupation. It is detestable. It is revolting. But it's not revolting for the reasons you think it is, you monarchic freak. I don't like them. I'm sure maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm losing a little bit of liberal street cred by saying this. I don't like the Saudi royal family. I don't like royal families. I am distinctly non-royalist. I believe that the seed of human accomplishment and the seed of human genius lies in ordinary human beings and not somebody with a damn piece of jewelry up on top of his noggin who says that, you know, well, I'm supposed to be the king because God made me that way. Screw you, Abdullah. And all the other monarchs of the planet. There's a dynamic over there that we don't even begin to understand. The reason that the Commission on the Prevention of Vice and the Promotion of Virtue walks around whipping women for showing an ankle out from under their beekeeper suits has to do not with the promotion of virtue or the prevention of vice, but by God, of keeping the poor in line. It's always about keeping the poor and the working class in line, whether it's machine guns in Flint, Michigan, or freaks carrying Qurans in Riyadh. It is about keeping working people down. Don't raise your head. Don't lift your eyes. Don't deem to think that you're as good a human as the human over there. According to the article, some here said the king's speech was a response to Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice's call on Monday for Arab governments to, quote, begin reaching out to Israel. Oh, yeah, they'll reach out to Israel. And Israel will reach out and touch them. And then the whole thing goes up in flames. Over what again? Help me here. Over what? Over a thing, a being that no one has ever seen, ever heard, ever touched, felt, tasted, or smelled. Over an imagination, over a fiction, over a creature that came to life in dreams. And these three particular versions are willing to torch the entire globe and all the normal people in it because of that made-up stuff. Frustrating night. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Luke's been waiting. Luke, I'm sorry you had to wait so long, man. I had to get that off my chest.
That's okay. Hey, Bobby, you got to get it out or just eat you up inside. You know how that goes.
It's a war. You know, this isn't a war on terror, Luke. This is a war on normal people.
Well, it's one of those things. You know, see, now that's the way we see it looking from our thing. Yeah, America, now Bush is looking at it from the other direction.
How so?
We're the normal people. Remember, we're looking at him.
Yeah.
And he's not the normal people looking at us.
No. No, no.
You know what I mean? It just depends on where you're standing at the time, how it looks. But, well, let's put it this way. I'm sitting here right now. I've got the sound turned off, you know, while I was listening to you, and that's fine. I was just looking at, you know, some of the other shows, and I'll watch them again on repeat. And it's bad when you realize Keith Olbermann has Andrew Sullivan on, and he's making sense.
Yeah, well, Andrew's had his little...
I've been kicked at him for a while, but...
Yeah, he's kind of had his little Road to Damascus moment, hasn't he?
They ran the thing here a minute ago. And last night, I didn't watch the correspondence thing. But you know what? I was sitting there last night, and they ran across the thing. It had the picture of the kid from American Idol in the mohawk.
Oh, God.
And you know, I thought this was the stupidest, most moronic thing I've ever saw until I saw Karl Rove.
And then it all went out the window, didn't it?
That's what I was going to say. You sit there thinking, you know, it's like you always say, we think we can't see anything any worse. Yes, we can.
You know, there's that scene in one of the Austin Powers movies, Luke, where he says to himself, Margaret Thatcher naked in a snowstorm. Oh. Margaret Thatcher naked in a snowstorm. Yeah, I got a new one for that. I saw that wormy, weaselly, sleazy little bug up on the stage, and Agnes looks at me and goes, he takes his clothes off sometimes. And we just looked at each other and went, ah!
Oh, well, now let me tell you the other thing while I've been sitting here watching. I saw this comment. Now tell me who you think said this. I detest ideologues pretending to be journalists.
Who said that? Mm-hmm. Tim Russert? Chris Matthews?
No. Bill O.
Bill O'Reilly. Oh, of course he did.
Now, let me tell you, the fun part right now, and like I say, it's okay to do it, I think, with the sound off. Sitting here bouncing back and forth, I was watching Bill O. Now, for the first 20 minutes, Bill O had a heavy-duty subject he had to talk about, you know, all the things going on in Washington today, you know, all these hearings and everything. And his first 20 minutes was a whole frank discussion of Rosie O'Donnell. And you're sitting there going, I usually go to NewsHounds, you know, and look at them because, like they say, I don't really want to try to watch it. It's better just to read other people who actually have enough stomach to do it.
Yeah, they're willing to put up with it, so, yeah.
But it's just interesting, though, to watch it and see how much crap they can throw up on the screen so they don't have to talk about all this going on. I mean, I think the other night, I think they the haircut and his show, they spent almost the whole time talking about spring break. You know, it's just sort of like...
Isn't that what they've been forced into, Luke?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's almost comical to sit there and watch him try to talk about anything but...
Poor little O'Reilly. I mean, I'm beginning to almost feel sorry for him. Okay. Yeah, I was lying. Jonathan, he had Jonathan Turley on, and Turley just...
I sent you that thing from Crooks and Liars, and that's just like you're sitting there going, look, Jonathan Turley, you may sometimes like him, sometimes don't, but he generally is pretty much down the middle of the road. You know what I mean? It's the law, and you take what you want to from it, but it's the law. And poor old Billow just went off on him.
Well, and see, Turley never really got a chance to really stick it in and break it off and point out.
He almost did.
Yeah, but point out to that poor fool O'Reilly that the reason you take the Fifth is not because you don't trust the Congress. You take the Fifth because there's something in your conduct that could be deemed criminal.
And you can't talk about it. I tell you what, the thing interesting today was watching Schumer. You know, you can tell what Charlie Schumer did before he was a congressman.
Yeah,
I believe he was a prosecutor.
Yeah, exactly. He was. Yeah, he ate people for lunch.
And he did today too. And you know what? I thought Karl Rove was the mealiest mouth, whitest man I'd ever seen until I saw this guy. I mean, you're gonna wonder when Karl Rove picks out the people to work in the administration.
Oh, are you talking about what's his name?
Samson.
Yeah, Samson.
It's like, does he just pick out people who look like they were his offspring or something?
Well, did he write Samson's opening statement? Did Karl Rove write that?
I figure he had an earphone in his ear and was being talked to him by.
Because it was either Alberto Gonzalez, the new Monica, or Karl Rove that wrote that opening statement. Nobody did anything wrong. No. It was all completely above board. The political process is the same as the competence process. Blah, 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 blah. And then under questioning, he goes, no. Wait a minute. They lied to you, okay? I mean, it wasn't John Dean sitting there saying there's a cancer on the presidency by any stretch of the imagination.
What I actually was hoping for. You know, I figured maybe he'd just crack, start talking, not shut up.
But I don't think that happens. That was the lesson learned from Watergate. The lesson from Watergate for the Republicans was not thou shalt be honest in thy governing. The lesson from Watergate was background everybody. Make sure they're all loyal. I mean, that's why that phrase comes. They talk about that's their dinner table conversation, Luke. Loyal Bushies.
I just figured maybe if they made him take his coat off, I just wonder if he was wearing a little backpack on his thing, so if he got out of line, they could give him the electric shock, you know?
Yeah, get back inside the invisible fence.
Oh, I tell you what. You were talking earlier about, I think was talking about the veto, about Bush vetoing it.
Mm-hmm.
Please let Bush veto it, because I know the local right-winger here. I want to call him the next day and go, why don't George Bush support the troops?
Why does George hate the troops? Why does George Bush hate America?
The next day I'm just going to absolutely just burn his phone up. I'm going to have so much fun doing that.
And well, you know what else is in there though, and you know, it's kind of like a double bonus because
the veterans' money and
the minimum wage is in there, Luke.
There's a whole bunch of stuff in there that people don't realize it.
Why does George Bush hate working people? Why can't he compromise? Why can't he end this war that the American people want ended?
Well, who was it said it the other? Leahy had said it. Said, you know, the reign of we tried a monarchy and it didn't fit. It's like the reign of King George is over. You do no longer have a rubber stamp. It's now where you say something, we say something, we meet somewhere in the middle. It's not. This is what I want. Give it to me.
Exactly.
May not get everything we want, but George, you ain't getting everything you want.
The spoiled child, the nanny has finally arrived to deal with the spoiled child.
Who was it? I listened to, maybe it was either Stephanie Miller or Randy Rhodes. I think it was Stephanie Miller this morning. She said, you had that image when you were listening to Nancy Pelosi, that you had this image of George Bush as a five-year-old in a cowboy suit. You know?
Yeah.
Just wanting to hold his breath and the mother sitting there going, just saying, go over and stand in the corner. Do you learn to play well?
And
that's what he is. He's just being a five-year-old, you know, stomping his feet.
And that's why you've got Nancy Pelosi out there saying, stop this bellicose talk. We can have a conversation. But, there, you know, there's a new Congress, and you're going to have to deal with it.
Like, George, you're now on a timeout. Go stand in the corner. When you can play well, we'll let you come back out and play. But I could not figure out how to link it today, but I tell you what, if you want to see something good, go today to the Daily Howler. And Bob Summersby has a thing today on Chris Matthews. And you know what? I said, I think, in the note when I sent you something else today, I said, you know, we should start a new thing called the Thorazine Express. And like I say, Billow's going to be on it, Chris Matthews, and I think Beck and a few others. But today, this thing with Chris Matthews, you know, I think we said it one time about the Republicans, but Chris Matthews now fits into this too. They are so jealous of Bill Clinton.
Oh,
Chris Matthews is so obsessed with this thing now. He's on Chris on is now after Bill Clinton's sex life again. Like, can't you?
And see, that's the thing that amazes me about these people. That's the defining event for their miserable, stinking lives, Luke. For me, the defining event, I think, of my adult life is going to turn out to be the Iraq War and the attempt to stop the next Iran War.
You know,
but for those people, it's oral sex. It's oral sex.
Yeah.
How do you compartmentalize your mind in such a way that happens? Oh, okay, over here we've got a war that's cost a million lives, and here we've got a Hummer. And I don't mean the vehicle.
Uh huh.
Now, which one defines your existence, Chris Matthews? Ah, the sex.
But, I mean, if you get a chance, go over and read Bob Summersby today, the Howler, and first two-thirds of it is about Chris Matthews. And when you sit there and you read some of the stuff he's got on it, you're just sitting there going, and I tell you what, Matthews is bad enough on his daily show, but if you ever watch his weekend little half hour, every time he comes on that thing, I don't care what four people he's got on there, his first question either has to do with Bill or Hillary. One or the other, and it's the old thing of, if anything's wrong in the world, how did they cause it? You know, and
the American people watch that and go, you know, he's a great journalist.
Oh, the other thing is, do we all finally believe that John McCain has finally taken that one step too far?
Oh, hey, I've got that audio. Shall we play it?
If you want to, go ahead. I tell you what, it's to the point now. The one that goes with it, though, is if you play that, then you need to play the Michael Ware one right after it. You know, where he's talking about, you know, because he's like, you know, what part of Wonderland are you living in?
Yeah, true. And you know, John, I don't think there's any real threat that John McCain is going to be the president of the United States in 2008, uh-huh. Luke. This is the final slapping indignity of the Bush family at John McCain. He is going to go down and he will lay on his deathbed. John McCain will, knowing that he was he was their
water boy.
Yeah.
Well, you remember in
prison.
No, you remember in History of the World Part One what Mel was at the French court?
Piss boy.
that's it.
John McCain, piss boy. Oh, piss boy. Yeah, and that's the way the Bushes treat him.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, during the 2004, he debased himself. You know, I used to have a little bit of respect for him, but after that thing in 2004, when in 2000 they attacked his family, and in 2004 he is essentially just sitting there, just yes sir, no sir, three bags full, sir.
Yeah, yes sir. May I? Thank you, sir. May I have another? See that with McCain? Did you notice in the John King interview? No. It was in the Wolf Blitzer interview. He's even taking to using Bush's words.
Oh, yeah, the phrases. I mean,
he said, I can understand how you'd think that the listening to news through the filter of the media. Filter? We never heard about filters till we got W in the White House.
Well, you know, it's like, say, I tell you what, I don't know which one would be the best. I'd say probably, if you really want to understand how all this goes, I would go back and pick up, one of the first books I'd pick up is Wayne Slater's Bush's Brain.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, hey, Luke, let me roll on here. I want to play this clip for folks. You have a great evening, all right?
You too.
Hey, I think my Mountaineers are going to win.
They looked good.
Yeah, they did. All right, we'll talk to you soon.
See you.
Bye. Okay, Agnes, let's do go to that. It says the file is King McCain. This is John King having John McCain on to address what McCain had said the day before on to Wolf Blitzer. John McCain has lost his mind.
I wanted to talk to you about the situation in Iraq. Yesterday, in an interview with Wolf Blitzer on the Situation Room, mm-hmm. I want to play this back for you.
Mm-hmm.
You had this
mm-hmm.
to say about
yep.
the situation there.
Yep, definitely in
General,
the right way.
Petraeus goes out there almost every day in an unarmed Humvee. I think you ought to catch up. You see, you are giving the old line of 3 months ago. I understand it. You certainly don't get it through the filter of some of the media.
Senator, did you really mean to say that General Petraeus goes out every day in an unarmed Humvee?
I mean that there are neighborhoods that are safe in Iraq, and he does go out into Baghdad, and the fact is there has been significant progress, and people are stuck in a time warp of 3 months ago. There's been, of course it's still dangerous. Of course it's still very dangerous. We've only had two of the five brigades there, and those, and we are already seeing significant progress.
Because I checked with General Petraeus' people overnight, and they said that he never goes out in anything less than an up-armored Humvee, and you also told Bill Bennett on his radio program on Monday, you said there are neighborhoods in Baghdad where you and I could walk through those neighborhoods today, yet retired General Barry McCaffrey, who just returned from Iraq in a new report that he's going to brief the White House on, said no Iraqi government official, coalition soldier, diplomat, reporter, foreign NGO, no contractor, can walk the streets of Baghdad without heavily armed protection. We've got two different stories here. Who's right?
Well, I'm not saying that they could go without protection. The president goes around America with protection. So I didn't say.
The president of the United States is a big old yellow-bellied coward, and he's afraid of people wearing T-shirts that say, I don't like George. And so I never said what I said, but I said it, but I didn't.
Can I have a cookie? I'd like to have my cookie. I'm crazy. Oh, everybody sing. Come on, Patsy. Crazy. This is just nuts. I mean, he is. He's crazier than a run-over dog. How do you expect to get away with that? On one day you say something. I didn't say that. You said he went out in unarmed Humvees. I said he went to neighborhoods that were safe, that there are safe neighborhoods. Okay. Okay, well, I checked, and there's a report coming out from the general, and he was over there, and he said there's nowhere that's safe in Baghdad. Of course, you know, saying that a neighborhood is safe doesn't mean he doesn't need protection. Yes, that is what it means! He's looking for Iraqi hookers, and he goes out, and he always carries condoms. Oh, I'm sorry. But the religious right, there's a right to life in Baghdad. And Jesus. Okay. With that, we quit. I can't go any further. And I got more stories. I'll save them for tomorrow night if you'll come back, please.
Please.
It'll be better, I promise. Maybe tomorrow they won't declare that Obama's not black enough, which means he's really way too black. I don't know. Hostage countdown, day two. Poor Obama's grandmother, where the hell is she? No. What have I got for you tomorrow? That's right. James Dobson has declared that Fred Thompson is not a Christian. Nah, it's not going to be any better tomorrow. No, there's no let up. The crazy people are out.
Please send aspirin.
Aspirin, hell, send heroin. That's the only thing that makes it all go away.
Thorazine
darts. Oh, all better. Okay. You guys have a good night. The show tonight, of course, was produced by my lovely, darling, talented wife, Agnes, who is occasionally spoken meanly to by weird little right-wingers who call in. I know, put them on the air. We try to put them on the air, but they don't last that long.
Call back tomorrow night, boys. We'll play again.
It was engineered by John Fox in Sydney, Australia, the show was. It's announced by Brian Reznor. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams, the podcast, and the archives of all the programs on the Horn. If you value the programs of the Horn, then you value Ben Birch. And if you haven't, you need to support him. We have wonderful moderators in the chat room. If you've never been to the chat room, go right in. It's very easy, and everybody's really friendly. There are message boards at HeadOnRadio.com. Gosh, we have so much fun during the show. And, of course, all the Head On Radio Network programs come to you because there are several thousand members of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters. And they get up every day and they go and they build the American dream. And building the American dream and supporting this network, they're helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR. It's all for you.
listening to The Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
Judge dismisses lawsuit against Rumsfeld. Mueller defends Patriot Act authority. DOJ aides key to Gonzalez's credibility. Bush says Iraq timeline could be disastrous. Russian intelligence sees U.S. military buildup on Iran border. Operation Bite, April 6th sneak attack by U.S. forces on Iran planned. Russian military sources warn that such a thing might happen. Brits to be paraded on TV. Inhofe vows to put brakes on Gore's live Earth concert at the Capitol. World may get greener, then wilt due to warming. Army officer says long-term morale is a concern. Saudi king slams illegitimate occupation of Iraq. Dems say more lawyers are needed for Bush probes. Code Pink dogs Clinton on 2008 trail. Women's groups plan to endorse Clinton. Polls march to demand total abortion ban. Critics target Navy Dolphin defense plan. And Burger King shifts policies on animals. These are the issues ahead on the Jeff Allen Wolf Show, starting now.